avail themselves so that we can process the other reports, the fourth quarter report and the minutes of the previous meetings. I hope that all of you have gone through the fourth quarter report and the minutes I supplied yesterday. Also, as part of the package yesterday is the invitation that came for members to join the Chinese Council on the 18th. Yeah, it's addressed to Mr. Brown. Yes, the committee was invited. So if you have an interest to attend that that event, kindly notify Mr. Brown. I think those are the issues. Next week, Mr. Brown, what about the program from next week?
Chairperson, yeah, thanks, Chair. Today is the last meeting of the committee for the term. We will be sitting, having a meeting with the chairperson to look at a program for the next term. We are aware of the request from the meeting of yesterday in respect of the urgency for the meeting with the assistant departments in respect of Uwani, as well as the request for a possible visit to Uwani. We will this will be discussed in the management committee, and we will inform members accordingly. This is the last meeting of this term. We only resume on the week of the 3rd of October to deal with the annual reports. We will probably be, as we have done in the past, courier these documents up to members to their home addresses for them to prepare, because we kick off with the AG's office on the 3rd of October, the Tuesday. But we will, programs will be forwarded, our programs will go out to members as soon as.
Thank you very much. I hope that members have been able to go through the report and have noted issues they would like to raise. From the side of the department, in terms of apologies, we have got an apology from the minister based on long scheduled arrangements from the department. And then the deputy minister is here. Also, the DG has indicated that there are two meetings they have to attend to, this one and the one at the NCOP Select Committee. So immediately after about an hour or 45 minutes, the DG has requested to be released so that he's able to attend to that one. So the Deputy Minister will be in charge of this side of the meeting. So I have granted that permission. DG and the Deputy Minister, you have arrived on time. Welcome. So I would like to hand over to you to do the presentation, Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and esteemed colleagues. It's good to be back with you again, and good to see Mr. Ollis and Ms. Macheka looking fine. Welcome. Chair, I'm not going to do the presentation, but I will stay here for the duration of the meeting, given the commitment to both the SELEC and the Portfolio Committees, and we don't want to discriminate. So the DG will kindly assist with the Select Committee, and I will stay here in case there are issues that have been raised, although I'm going to be supported by a very competent team of senior officials. Chair, rather than speaking about the achievements, I thought the manner in which we could deal with this, my opening remarks, which should really focus on the challenges. because what is it that is of concern? I think as a department, we're doing extremely or reasonably well in terms of the targets that we've set for ourselves, in terms of the goals, and we've been working extremely hard in collaboration with the provinces to achieve the necessary outcomes. So amongst other things, we know that the National Senior Certificates examination is imminent, but the DG and his very able team have visited all the provinces to mobilize, to support, to intervene wherever it is necessary. So it becomes a reality not just in one selected area, but across the country. That is the extent of the oversight and support that we're trying to provide to the provinces. The issue that I think that concerns the ministry the most, as well as the DG and the officials, is the issue of the infrastructure. It is a huge challenge. It has been a huge challenge. And we were confronted with certain realities which I shared with the, I think, select committee or the committee, standing committee on appropriations in relation to this particular matter. The reality is that in the Eastern Cape there are more than 1,200 schools that are not viable or feasible. They have a learner enrollment of less than 125 learners. And you would find the real situation, you would find a primary school in a particular village and not less than a kilometer away, you would have another primary school with less than 50 learners. So this meant that there had to be a rationalization in terms of the schools, mergers and closures had to take place, and a process had to be followed. The result of that particular exercise was, and it's a very broad consultative exercise that had to be undertaken, And we had as a department develop appropriate guidelines to assist provinces. And these guidelines were informed by the judgment in the Western Cape, where the court set out certain tasks or certain procedures that had to be followed before a school could be closed or merged. And that would be, amongst other things, amount to consultation with all stakeholders, that is the community of learners, educators, etc. Now, those guidelines have indeed been very helpful, and what the department did beyond that, it sent a dedicated team from the National Department to assist the Eastern Cape in finalizing the process. So not only did we provide them with a theoretical framework and guideline, we sent out a dedicated team to do this. Now, this definitely resulted in a delay in the implementation of programs, because schools that were under the RCD program were now removed from the RCD program. Schools that were going to be built, we had to hold back until the process is finalized. And we are happy to inform you that we are now in a position to proceed. So that was the one principal difficulty in the Eastern Cape. In the Free State itself, you have the Public Works, Department of Public Works that had previously undertaken all building construction, whether it was health facilities, schools, or correctional facilities, or even courts for that matter. There was a great level of inefficiency, and we had decided that, look, in order to basically advance and accelerate your infrastructure development program, we would have to give out to other agencies. Now, amongst the schools that were allocated originally to the Free State was an allocation that the Free State handed over to the IDT, which is almost a sister organization or component of the Department of Public Works. We were terribly disturbed At the lack of progress there. And we ensured that we engage with them. And this is not an engagement just on an official level. The ministry was there. I was sitting with the deputy minister in Public Works and the entire team, got all the implementing agents together and agreed that these schools would be returned to the department in order that we could instruct a more efficient implementing agent, that is a DBSA, to do that. So that is another problem that in my opinion, has been resolved. We are now confronted with two challenges. They're not macro challenges, but they certainly impact on our expenditure. The one is the 32 schools, for which there is an alternative model. Plans have been approved, engaged, contractors have been engaged, but we were alerted that the procedure that had been followed in relation to the tender was not compliant with the Public Finance Management Act. So due process had not been followed. And the risk of that is you might undertake or initiate a construction, litigation is commenced, they interdict you from proceeding further, and this results in a dilatory exercise where a construction which would have been completed in a year is now delayed for a further 2 years. The view of the ministry and consultation with the senior management would be and was that we should firstly seek legal opinion, secondly ensure that we comply with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act so that it is transparent, that it's clear, that there is full material compliance so that we don't have any unnecessary challenges that would basically suspend that. We can share with you that process, and Dr. Whittle, has now been finalized and has been gazetted. The 32 is the schools.
In the process.
So we're almost in the process of finalizing. But at the moment it's gazetted and the tender process gets finalized. We don't have to wait for any other things because we've identified the land. Everything has been done, really. That day, in our opinion, would contribute very, very significantly to the construction of the schools. Then there is another group of schools, I think 42? 47 schools, where we had the same flaws in terms of compliance, material compliance with the Public Finance Management Act, and dealt particularly with the internal auditing arrangements and decisions that had to be taken. It's almost a link in a chain of events. You know, if you look at your business process management scheme, there are the different things that have to be done, and this was a weak link in the process. And again, we were cautioned by the Office of the Auditor General, and we sought legal opinion, which says it could be either way, but it would be much more, it's better, it would be in your interest and to basically ensure that there is full compliance. And again, what we did is we ensure that we set up, we have a legal team, we have an auditing team that basically manages the entire process so that it's clear, that it's transparent. Now, that process is with the other 32 schools. Would result in us being able to construct immediately. We will be negotiating with the contractors to tell them that, look, it's not business as usual. If you're going to basically get the contract, it would mean that you would have to work during December and January so that we could accelerate development. I'm being very honest, forthright about this particular matter. What we've done as a department, you know, if you look at the two preceding years, we've been building at an average of a school per week. And then we had this lull, and we were very concerned about it. So the minister there, the deputy minister, DG, met with the stakeholders and said, look, I mean, we have to intervene overseas. It's not really our domain to really get into those particular issues, but we can't have the DG standing on his own as accounting officer without the political driver on our side, and we are doing whatever is necessary. I could say from a very personal and ministerial level that we see an account from on progress every 2 weeks. In other words, not once a month, once a quarter, every 2 weeks. And the progress that we require is not just a narrative to say this is where we are. We want photographs to indicate precisely what the progress is so that visually we can see what is happening. That has worked extremely well in the preceding years where we had similar challenges out there. And I do believe that the schools are now with the right implementing agents. Progress will be made, but there would be a slight delay. And I don't want to hide behind excuses, but to tell you these are the real situations, because there won't be a different explanation. This would be the explanation in relation to this particular exercise. So that is the one part. I think the other part, if you look at the performance, I think we're doing extremely well. What we have to accelerate on, in my opinion, is we've developed an instrument which is a non-intrusive instrument for assessment of by educators, where they are in privately able to assess their ability in mathematics from grade 1 to grade 12. That instrument, the application is there. We've made it now available to our teacher resource centers. And once it is used optimally, we will have thousands of educators who would be in a non-intrusive way be able to assess their ability to be able to determine what interventions is required and certainly improve on both the pedagogy and the content knowledge. So that the process has been completed, it's now the implementation, and I believe by January you would have not hundreds but thousands of educators who would basically be embarking on this particularly important instrument that we've dealt with. What is the ministry looking forward to? And I'm not giving you the first quarter report, I'm just giving you a general vision of what we think would be very, very critical in the achievement of quality education, that we are in the fourth industrial revolution. We are at the level of connectivity of 54% of our schools. We believe it should be 100%, particularly important for us to bridge the digital divide in the rural communities, such as in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and the Eastern Cape. We're working extremely hard with our partners. We have indeed urged and successfully persuaded the minister in the presidency to convene a meeting involving the Minister of Post and Telecommunications, Ministry of Communications, Higher Education, Basic Education, Science and Technology, to see how can we collectively work together in order to accelerate the drive to connectivity of schools. And again, connectivity doesn't amount to basically providing a device and giving them a 3G card. It's more than that. It's really having Wi-Fi. It's really having broadband speed that is necessary for multimedia learning and teaching to take place. And that is the focus. What we can say is that once the digital transition takes place in terms of television, that too would help us terrestrially to get to schools much, much quicker. But we're using all possible methods, including white spaces that are available on television to be able to reach schools in Mpumalanga. There's such an exercise that is taking place, and what we do have is a commitment. Before the end of this month, I think, or certainly not later than the 7th of next month, the ministers affected would basically be able to meet and take it to the next phase. What we've agreed that at least once a month, the deputy ministers from these particular portfolios will get together and try to unblock any constraints that we are faced with. So at an administrative level, we're doing extremely well. More than 98% of our schools are now connected administratively. At a teaching and learning level, we do believe, particularly in our rural provinces, that we have to do much better. Now, what is the good news that sits on top of all this? We've embarked in a very robust way, colleagues, on the digitization of textbooks. We do believe that it's important, and this committee had raised it in the past, to say that digitization would help us. For example, we see this reality all the time, you have the migration that is taking place. A class of 35 this year suddenly increases to 40 the next year. Textbooks are ordered for 35 learners, 5 short. Then you've got to go to the publishers. It's a long process before delivery takes place. We're already in the second term when the delivery takes place. When it's digitized, it's so easy, you can just download it. You can download either lesson or a whole book from a printer, and you're able to make up. But the other advantage of digitization is really it becomes cost efficient. You basically save more than 60% of your costs of procurement or purchase of these books. Now, having done so, we did remarkably well. We've got mathematics and science in grades 10, 11, and 12 textbooks that which we own as a department intellectually that is being used across all 9 provinces of extremely good quality over there that is available. We have for grades 4, 5, and 6 mathematics, science, and technology. We introduced that some 2 to 3 years ago. And again, the good news is without imposing on provinces, all provinces are using it because they've discovered that the cost that they save in terms of procurement can be utilized for other purposes. We have 174 editions of textbooks with Cecil Nzalo for the intermediate for the senior phase, that is grades 7 and 8, grades 8 and 9 in mathematics, science, technology, accountancy, and economics. And if you look at the quality of those textbooks, you'd say, well, wow, this is really phenomenal work. So just roughly, we are almost at 60 to 65% of digitization of a textbook per subject per grade. And it is our view that by the end of the administration, we should have at least a textbook in a subject that is digitized, but not just a textbook that is accepted and embraced by all, where you have excellent practitioners, in fact, writers and academics who would basically deal with that. And the advantage there is once it's owned by you intellectually, you can revise, you can review, you can refine, you can improve, and you do so at minimal cost. And I think that is a good exercise. Another thing that we can share with the committee, and it's some macro issues that I'm going to deal with, and the final details would be dealt with by our presenter, is the issue of centralized procurement. The Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, Free State have proved that by centralized procurement you save millions of rands. And the advantage of that is the saving does not go back to Treasury. The saving stays with the provincial departments who are able to utilize those resources in a much more significant way. Stationery last year, for example, the procurement was centralized among some provinces, which included the Western Cape, Gauteng, and it translated into millions of rands of savings. The same applied to textbooks, certain textbooks that, you know, are accepted. What has emerged, and this is an important point that people tend to overlook, is that whereas we were sitting in the past with 17 departments of education, 17 different types of textbooks and resources for different school departments, we now have a uniform standard approach to textbook provision, and I think the system itself has settled very well. So Chair, these are my remarks to say that what we have to look for, what we have to look at very, very, very attentively are three things. One is the infrastructure, the ACD program, which we have to basically monitor and drive in an efficient way. So the target, and I told the department that here the accounting officer will tell you that I told him I want nothing less than 102 schools by the end of this financial year to make up for the lapse last year. The second would be in relation to accelerating our connectivity to our schools and continuing with the digitization process that we've embarked on. And the third would be to ensure that our teacher development centers are now fully functional. Many of them are doing extremely well, but the others that are, I would say, mediocre, and I don't think that was the purpose. The purpose that was that they would be hubs and centers of excellence that could provide access and opportunity to our educators. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. I think through the DG we would then ask the presenter to, with your permission, to do so. These are just opening remarks. I will be here, so when you engage, colleagues are welcome to put any questions to the Deputy Minister. He's not going to leave. He will be with you until the end. Thank you.
Sure. Very much, DG, for the insightful remark, DM. Yes, for the insightful remarks that you have made. And even the pointers that you have alluded to. I would not waste time because I know that members have noted some of the key points that you raised, and hand over to the DG to proceed with the presentation, or whoever that you have nominated to start the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister, and thank you for the opening remarks. The presentation is going to be done by Ms. Monsu and Ms. Mulalakwa. The first part will be done by Ms. Monsu, and then the second part will be done by Ms. Mulalakwa.
Can we follow that on?
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honourable Members, the Chair, as well as Observed Deputy Minister. As highlighted, the presentation this morning will be focusing around our performance in terms of the fourth quarter report, and I'll go through then the slide. It's the part A, which is the performance indicators and the targets, and then the part B, which is done through the CFO, which is then the financial report. In terms of, I've already projected that it's our performance, and then going then to the major highlights that have been highlighted within the department for the first quarter is the writing then of the senior certificates for 2017 examination, as well as the department finalized the evaluation study of the Funza Lushaka Bursary program, as well as oversight monitoring that the DG has been providing to the various provinces, as well as in terms of the oversight, as well as then the fourth annual National Excellent Awards, in which the hardworking schools and the teachers were awarded in that regard, as well as the new kids project that was launched. Also, what we wanted to reiterate is that the government has gone through various also ways of improving, that the consequence management that has been put in place where there's challenges in the performance, as well as trying to strengthen the management of the schools, as well as harmonizing then alignment and monitoring and better program planning and reporting, not only for the department as well as across the sector, and as well as the development of the program performance measures, trying to strengthen our planning and our reporting on how then we're responding to the outcomes, as well as the provincial audit outcome that has been prioritized. This is just a highlight in terms of the programs that I'll be highlighting on, which is the programs within the Department of Basic Education, program on the administration, which is 1 and 2 focusing on curriculum, 3 focusing on teacher education, human resource, 4 on planning, information and assessment, and 5 on educational enrichment services. In terms of an overview of our first quarter performance, we are currently at 55% in terms of the performance that has progressed, and partially achieved were at 36%, and some of the partially achieved would be as an element that we do have most of the annual targets that we are still continuing to report on and still continue to commit to, hence then we are still at 36%, and we have 9% that has been then on the red, which is the element in terms of the RCD that the DM has reiterated that we'll try to improve, as well as looking at the second chance. This is just on a pie chart we just also added just to show more or less how the program, the progress has been. This is a slide that we also wanted to reiterate, the strengthening of the internal audit unit, which will then focus on the auditing of quarter 1 and quarter 3 specifically to ensure that in quarter 1 as a department we are more readily aware and progressive in terms of the financial year, and quarter 3 also to strengthen that the auditing that will be done by the internal auditor in terms of ensuring that in preparation for the quarter 4 we are able to see the gaps and where areas we need to strengthen to ensure that we have proper auditing and process. And the review covered by our internal auditor will be focused on the accuracy, the validity and the completeness. In terms then of going to slide 12, what is key on the slide is just to highlight that a total of 38 posts were advertised, including in the school improvement support, and as well as the development unit for the NINU and the inclusive education in all provinces, as well as the department having to have 2 key senior services posts that were filled. In terms of the next slide, on slide 13, we have a total of 44 employees who attended the skills development, and mainly that slide is just to focus on how the department is strengthening its areas on strengthening the skills that are required and improvement of the employees within the department. And in terms of slide 14, it is we are just reflecting also the participation of our labor relations in the Karigood investigations, which were conducted in KZN, Mpumalanga, Free State, and the Eastern Cape. And then as well as that we are still ongoing with in terms of our JITO and our IT within the department. This is just an overall process slide that outlines the process that we have adhered to in terms of the processing, the finance, and the payments. As well as the slide 16, and there's additional information in terms of how we have been progressing in terms of our legal and legislative services, our accommodation, and the agreements that are signed with the public-private partnerships. This is also just for information, colleagues, on in terms of how the coordination and the secretarial support has been conducted within the department. And then I will move on then to the next slide, on the slide 23. Slide 23 is just also to reiterate on the key highlights that I identified on how internal audit has been given support, is not only in terms of the Karigood, but also in terms of the SASMs and all the critical areas such as the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, where we are trying to strengthen to ensure that we are more progressive and responsive in those areas in terms of the progress in the department. And then moving on then to the international relations engagement on slide 28, we just thought to highlight that currently the MOU for Kenya and Sri Lanka were drafted and sent to the legal service in request for internal opinion, as well as there has been engagement in meeting with the multilateral partners for the USAID, the EU, and the Japan International Cooperative Agency, basically in coordinating programs of cooperation with the foreign government and the relevant agencies. And then I'll move on then to slide 31. Slide 31 is then the key indicators which have been tabled in our annual performance plan, which highlights that we are progressive in terms of the percentage of the service providers within the procurement unit, and the output that was targeted was 6,703, and we are green as we have achieved that. And in terms of then 1.1.2, on the percentage of received misconduct, there has been more cases, hence then we have seen the color that is white, so therefore we are not necessarily underperforming, we have not had any case to resolve, so we are functioning effectively for now, as well as the percentage of received grievances and cases resolved, there's also no grievances lost. And then I'll move on to program two. In terms of the learner and teaching support material in slide 33, currently a total number of 4,909,810 workbooks were printed, and the percentage by 30 June was then 93%. And then we also highlighting below the various textbooks to ensure standardization that were printed, focusing on the grade 12 technical mathematics and science textbooks, as well as the civil, electrical and mechanical textbooks and technology textbooks, among the others that have also been listed, such as the compressed grade 7 to 9 technology workbook and textbooks into textbooks. In terms of the next slide, slide 34, there we have also progressed in terms of the development and quality assurance of the incremental implementation of African languages toolkits, as well as ensuring that in terms of our development of the national catalogue, we also have printing and delivery in terms of the Braille workbooks done, as well as ensuring that we also have the screening of the grade 1 to 2 South African sign languages that have been done. And it's also an overview in terms of the MST on slide 35. And then moving then to slide 37, we have also ensured that there's monitoring and rationalization of the small and non-viable schools, where then provincial monitoring and support were conducted in three provinces, namely the Eastern Cape, KZN and Limpopo, as well as the multi-grade toolkit in terms of the implementing the toolkit in the provinces that trained a total of 1,046 subject advisors and 1,251 teachers. The next slide is just also for information to show how we have been monitoring across the other provinces in terms of the distribution of advocacy materials that have been sent along. In terms of slide 40 on the early childhood development, we have monitoring instruments that have been developed to assist the baseline report on the implementation on the NCF developed, as well as the various frameworks, as well as an online in-service training of the ECD practitioners on play-based learning, which is 5,153. In terms of inclusive education, we have an implementation of the inclusive education policy, and currently we have appointed a project manager for the learners with severe and profound intellectual disability conditional grant with effect from the 1st of May, as well as prepared a system for the implementation of the three-stream model, which is mainly focusing on monitoring the training of teachers to strengthen the pilot of the 26 technical occupational subjects. As well as continuing with inclusive education, we have finalized the development of the GCE technical occupational qualification, and we have also engaged with Department of Higher Education and Training and Umalusi on the reconceptualizing, and also we have then reviewed the policy on the home education to the Council of Education Ministers, and we also then focused that we have reworked the business plans to ensure that the CS project by the September is completed, and then from the EU budget. The next slide is just the monitoring that we've also been doing in terms of the CAPS. And then in terms of the further education and training, going to slide 44, we have 68 African subject advisors in all provinces for purpose of mitigating the risks that are related to the implementation of the 2017 new literature networks. We also have 100 African language subject advisors in all provinces for the purpose of mitigating the risks related to implementation, and 94 English subject advisors in all provinces also assisting in that regard. In terms then of the next slide, which is slide 45, we have developed the CAS Digital Hospitality Curriculum for Grade 10 to 12 partnership with the Sun International on improving the performance of the hospitality studies. And in terms of slide 46, we are also continuing with the monitoring, and some of the key progress we have made is that we have developed a monitoring instrument on the IGRA and the IIAL school visit, as well as conducted the IGRA monitoring in 9 schools in 3 provinces, namely KZN, Gauteng province and the Northwest, and currently also finalized the multi-grade toolkits. And then moving then to the second chance, which is on slide 48. Currently, second chance is all away. It was one of our new programs, which is focusing on young people who have failed matric to meet the requirements. And then in the slide 49, we are just outlining that currently we are tracking of the learner participating in 2017 supplementary examination, which is 5,634, as well as some of the engagements we've done on monitoring the face-to-face classes, as well as providing quality support for the examinations through the content of the and the content access points. Karigude, on slide 50, we have conducted the investigations and the reported case of fraud and corruption, and the report was then handed over to the Hawks. And then also there's been a collection of the access material from volunteers on the Bogani Rainmakers Warehouse service providers, as well as the research that has been conducted where, in terms of the whereabouts of the 90 Braille machines for the 2015-16 campaign. And then 15 Braille machines have been discovered. And then we also conducted verification on identifying learners who have passed and enrolled for matric to ensure that volunteers are not paid for learners who have passed or enrolled for the matric. This is then also a reflection of the table on the next slide, which is basically based on our annual performance plan. In terms of the number of offline digital content packaged and distributed to provinces, as is an annual target, we are currently at a milestone where the ICT Interprovincial Working Group is the form in which the digital content package is distributed took place on the 4th of July. In terms of that indicator, we have achieved our annual target already, as all the digital content packs were distributed. We are also, in terms of 2.1.2, we are amber in that regard in terms of the number of schools per province monitored for utilization of ICT. And the reason then in terms of our deviation is that the provinces then must be given them the 30 days notice set for the DBE activities, which could not be accomplished for the said province. And then the outstanding provinces would then be visited in the second quarter. And in terms of the number of offline digital content resource developed, it is an annual target, and the current progress that we have made is that we have convened meetings with the Sasol Inzalo Foundation to then discuss the development of the 6th digital textbook. The next slide is also a reflection of the indicators, which are annual indicators, and currently the progress in terms of the percentage of public schools using the home language workforce, as well as the indicator on the percentage of public schools with the mathematics workbooks for learners in grade 1 to 9. Mostly then the reasons to the current milestone within the department is that we have consolidated data from provinces and signed off the artwork for the volume 1 of grade 1 to 9, as well as the printing of the volume 1 has commenced. And then a total number of 24,909,810 workbooks has been printed, as I've already reiterated. 2.3.1 is also annual targets in which currently we have just highlighted the output in terms of the status quo of what we have progressed and the 9 primary schools monitored, as well as the schools monitored in terms of the number of schools monitored on the implementation of the reading norms, as well as the progress we have made in terms of the number of schools monitored on the implementation of the incremental introduction of African languages. The next indicator also on the mathematics, science and technology lesson plans developed. Currently, we're still ongoing in that progress, and then as it is an annual target, we'll further give progress then during the other quarters in that regard. And then in terms of the MST teacher guide development for the intermediate, senior and FET phase, currently in terms of the milestones we have progressed is that the framework for the lesson plans has been developed, and the teachers as developers have also been identified, and subject advisors developed have been also identified. And also in terms of our next indicator on the number of mathematics training sessions workshops monitored, we are also on the milestone of 5 training sessions monitored. And then for the number of training center caps, it's also the milestone currently, which is 1 training session that was conducted. And then in terms of then the reason for the deviation is that mediation of the training manuals was still then conducted. In terms of 2.4.5, currently our quarterly target was 9. It's in terms of the number of schools visited for monitoring CAPS implementation in technical schools. We have our output is 5 schools visited in different provinces. And the reason for the deviation is then due to the clashes in respect of the scheduled visits and the training sessions targeted province held visit couldn't be made. And the corrective action then would be that the 4 schools deviated are scheduled then to be visited in the current second quarter. And then in terms of the number of learners obtaining subject passes, this is the indicator on the second chance, which I've reiterated that the reason we are red is that we had initially had coaching milestone of 2,000, but because of the school calendar year is that the students who have written the exams now are in June. The results, we'll be receiving them in August. They have received them in August, so the progress will then be reported in the second quarter. And also, I would just like to reiterate to the committee that on the annual target, we have made a typo there in terms of 20,000 quarterly. We just wanted to highlight that and apologies in that regard. And this is just the various pictures in terms of the engagement that the DG has conducted in Gauteng and in KwaZulu-Natal Western Cape. And then moving on to Program 3, the progress that has been made in terms of the education performance management and development of whole school evaluation is slide 61. We have monitored implementation of IQMS in the 6 schools, 2 district offices and 2 provincial offices in KZN and Free State. And also below is just a highlight in terms of a total of 514 principals have signed their job descriptions with their immediate supervisors, and also having work plans in place in terms of ensuring that there's monitoring as well as the PEDs and the analysis conducted. In terms of the next slide on the education and human resource planning provision monitoring, currently in, we have 1,302 preliminary educators who are appointed during the quarter, and we are currently sitting then on 82% of the graduates who were placed at the end of May 2007. In the next slide, in terms of slide 63, that in terms of the education human resource planning provision and monitoring, we have a draft policy that has been developed to strengthen the regulation of the appointment of foreign educators and ensuring that only foreign educators with scarce skills are appointed within the school. And in terms of the education labor relations conditional services, it's highlighting then the progress that we've made, and officials supported at the dispute in section 77 in the NEDLAC, and other field as dispute demanding discussions and free education and economic and national minimum wage underway. The slide 64 is just to highlight in terms of the initial teacher education, and we have been monitoring SDBE then to support the teacher recruitment process. And then in terms of slide 65 on the continuity professional teacher development, a total of 40 subject advisors and lead teachers from the Free State were trained in the IFA. There will still be continuous training in the other provinces throughout the financial year, and currently the progress was then based on what we have conducted in the Free State. In terms of the education management and governance development on slide 67, a total of 94 district officials in the Eastern Cape, Matatiele and Straits-Rand, 131 in KZN and 48 in the Northern Cape, as well as 54 in the Northern Cape, were trained in conjunction with the NECT, as well as the parents and the communities were trained on how to support learning and teaching. In terms then of the LTSM policy development and innovation on slide 69, we have a total of 11,721 teachers who were trained in the second teacher training for phase one, as well as the promotion of schools' libraries in terms of our annual commitment that, and the campaign has also been implemented. And then in the next slide of 70, in terms of our curriculum research, we have 80 Vodacom teacher centers that have been completed and installation in terms of the window office 365, as well as 55 teacher centers which have received video conferencing facilities. And then in terms then of the teacher development implementation, we've also been able to train 70 GETS MFT subject advisors, as well as ensuring that we give support of training manuals and metrics in critical science. And also through the Vodacom partnership, we have managed to have 850 paper video gadgets which were procured for training in mathematics and 10 for underperforming districts. And this is a highlight then in terms of the indicators based on what has been tabled by within the APP. And also, we are also having annual targets in this regard. And in terms of 3.1.1 of percentage of SGBs that meet the minimum criteria in terms of the effective, currently the progress is that the 2016-17 report was analyzed and discussed within the EMGD provincial officials to inform the amendments to the tool and the intervention of the program. We are also progressive in terms of the next indicator on the percentage of schools producing the minimum set of management documents at a required standard, and currently is also in terms of the engagement on the 2016-17 report, which was analyzed in the tools and the interventions that are in place, as well as the number of the Funza Lushaka bursaries that have been awarded. The output was 14,792, and there we have a deviation then that some of the higher education institute fees were lower than the average, and the amount leading then to the more bursaries has been available then to be awarded. And then the first quarter report from the NSFAS will then be analyzed once it has been received at site, and then more progress then can be provided and adjustments can be made then to have more of the students enrolled. In terms of the indicator on the number of the teachers participating in the EFAL diagnostic, it's also an annual target, and the current status of our focus is that we have our TORs in place, and then the supply chain processes are also underway, as well as the 3.3.2 on the teachers participating in the physical science, as well as the teachers participating in accounting and diagnostic tests, as well as the number of teachers participating in mathematics diagnostic test. We are having processes that are still underway, and we have the terms of reference in place in the supply chain processes as well, in then preparing that we'll be able to give more progress as well on the assessments to be conducted in quarter three and quarter four. In terms of the number of schools PED monitored, we are progressive in that regard, as well as the number of PEDs monitored on the implementation of the PMDS, we are also progressive in that regard. We have then achieved the targets we had set. And in terms of 3.5.1 on the number of PEDs that had their post-provisioning process assessed for compliance with the post-provisioning norms and standards, is an annual target. And currently, we have three officials from the Eastern Cape who have been trained on the application. And moving on to Program 4, in terms of slide 76, in terms of the national assessments, we have set language and mathematics items for the use of formal assessments in grades 6 and 9. We have also have set language and mathematics items for the use of systematic assessments in grade 3, 6, and 9, and as well as for textbook booklets for each of the grades 6 and 9 subjects. Our segment report has been validated and official release of the segment coordinated committee in terms of then ensuring that we have a final segment report produced, as well as in terms of the examination and assessment schools. We have question papers that have been set, which is 260, and the question papers were also written then by the candidates who took the SC 2017 examination in May. And then in terms of the grant management, we have reviewed the business plans for the LSPID grant for all the PEDs. And currently then we are undertaking on the conditional grant evaluation visit then to the Eastern Cape, the Limpopo, as well as in Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. And then just to reiterate again, the LSPID grant is the learner with severe and profound intellectual disability grant that I'm referring to. In terms of the EMIS, we are currently progressing in that regard, and this is just to highlight that we have received 11,592,736 learners from 25,033 schools. That is ongoing process, even on site 79, is just to reiterate on the process that we've been underway in terms of the EMIS. And then moving on then to, in terms of slide 81, we have, in terms of district level planning and implementation support, we're also having a task team to evaluate and incorporate some of the public comments in amending the policy then on the organization of roles and responsibilities. In terms of then, this is just a highlight on the progress that has been happening in terms of the new deal on slide 84. We have various project one, project two, project three, in terms of the use of the DVE workbooks, looking at the schools that work as well as project three on the management of the NIDU findings, and then and presentations then on the NIDU findings and the first 5-year cycle, and then implications for the education sector have been made in terms of the different areas. And then in terms of the physical planning, we have made transfers, this is slide 86, we have a total of 23,419, which is 99% of the schools that have been provided with water, a total of 22,408, which is 95% of schools provided with fencing and gates, according to the NIMS report data, as well as a total of 23,428. And then we come in then to the RCD, in terms of the accelerated school infrastructure delivery initiative. Currently, in terms of the replacement of inappropriate schools, we have managed to have one for the first quarter, and we are ongoing on that progress. And in total, is 180 of the 386 allocated schools that have been completed. Sanitation, currently, we have not more significant progress as yet. However, we are still ongoing with the progress, and in total, it's 425 of the 585 allocated schools provided with sanitation. And water, in total, we have 616 of 959 allocated schools that have been provided with water. And then electricity, currently, we are sitting at 306 of the 535 allocated schools that have been provided with electricity. And just a reflection on the next slide of the partnerships that have taken place with AFBO, as well as New Africa Education Foundation on issues such as the trolley mobile libraries that were handed over to the Pumela schools in KwaMashing, KwaZulu-Natal. I've reiterated a bit on the African, on the ABANG language, sorry, and mathematics test items. So this is a reflection in terms of where we are in terms of our APP indicators, as well as the number of the NSC and SC reports produced. And currently, as it also, these are annual targets, the milestones that currently will be provided in quarter four, in terms of the number of question papers set annually for the NSC and SC, currently we have 128 question papers that have been approved and written in the May and June exams. And then, apologies, in terms of the RCD, we've already reiterated, and here just to strengthen to say that in the reasons for the deviations, we've highlighted that the delays in the signing of the sessions of the agreement and the bids for the 7 clusters for water and sanitation and 7 clusters for the modular structures and 10 conventional structures. The corrective actions that we have put in place as a department is that we'll be having session agreements that are going to be signed as well as the concurrent then for the appointment of the contractors in the inappropriate schools that have been granted. And in terms of the sanitation, we're also then looking at the corrective actions of having those session agreements signed as well, and ensuring that there's construction progress in the Eastern Cape, as well as engagements held then with the implementing agents on the professional service providers to fast track the agreements, as well as and the development plans for contractors are being appointed also in the Limpopo province. And then in terms of the electricity, our reason for deviation was that Eskom realized the outage challenges in emerging the last batch of the schools, and what we have put in place as our remedial actions is that Eskom monitored and engagements were held, and the fast tracking then of the energizing of the last batch of the schools is underway and has been and it was done. In terms of the 4.4.1 percentage of the public schools using the standardized school administration systems and for reporting, is that currently then we are, in terms of the same school, still used in the third parties, mainly in KZN and GDE, and then the corrective action that we have put in place in that regard is that the provinces will send their circulars to school to motivate them to use the SA SEMS for reporting. And then we are progressive in terms of the percentage of learners from public schools that are successfully uploaded on the LUIS system. In terms of the indicator on the number of officials from districts that are achieved below the national benchmark in the NSC participating in mentoring program, it's an annual target, and most of the information then in terms of our progress we will be able to provide it in the upcoming quarters, as well as an improvement plan for the district office to improve on the areas that were visited as satisfactory. It's also currently what we have is an improvement of biennial. And currently then is that we are having a mopping up process to finalize the data collected to improve on the responses rate for reporting, as well as the data cleaning up on the report packaging and dissemination in the second quarter. And then in terms of the percentage of district managers assessed against development criteria, we are also then in terms of the corrective action, then we are following up then on the outstanding provinces for the completed baseline assessment forms. In program 5, in terms of slide 94, currently we are having for 2017-18 monitoring the plan and the data verification, and the schedule was developed then on the purposeful of planning and validation. On health promotion, the HIV policy was approved by Cabinet on the 10th of May and launched at the 8th South African AIDS Conference by the Deputy Minister on the 14th of June. And also then we have the TB and HIV programs where internationally there's been engagement in that regard. And then moving then on the psychosocial support, currently we have a total of 800 children that have been reached with psychosocial support services, as well as training that has been conducted for the Department of Education then in Pietermaritzburg, and then training on the orientation then on the sessions held in Northwest, we're reaching 402 educators on the impact of trauma of the learners. In terms of the social cohesion agenda, that is the various engagements that were conducted in that regard that took place. In terms of the next slide, 97, on the safety and education, we have monitored and support provided then on the 12 hotspot schools and road and safety campaigns as well in partnership in the Imperial Holdings. And also we have a total of 1 million learners that have reached with the safe road usage and scholar patrols, and we are commencing then with the anti-bullying television and production. This is just a highlight of the indicators, and in terms of the number of schools monitored for the provision of nutrition, we are AMBER, as we had a quarterly target of 10, and then currently the reason for the deviation was that some of the schools monitored the trips were cancelled, and then the corrective action then in that regard is that we'll have the remaining 5 schools monitored visited, which will be carried out over the subsequent quarter. And then in terms of the 5.2.1, we are it's also an annual target, and most of the progress will also be provided then in the upcoming quarters. And then for number of learners, teaching officials and SGB participating, in the social cohesion and gender equality, we are progressive in that regard and currently sitting at 2,264. And in terms of the number of hotspot schools monitored towards implementation of the NSSS, we are also progressive in that regard. We have achieved our quarterly milestone of 12. I would like then to hand over then the rest part of the presentation then to the CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will start on slide 102. This slide reflects budget and expenditure per program. And if we were using a straight line method, the spending would be at 25%. But program one is at an acceptable level of 25.9%, and then program two is showing 5.69%, which is a bit low, which is quite low. But the reason for that, it has been explained that the workbooks have been printed. We have received invoices. We are in the process of paying them. So expenditure will reflect in the second quarter report. And I must add that this year we moved very fast on the workbooks because if we recall previously, by October, it's only then that we are receiving the first invoices. But we are already receiving invoices already in the second quarter. And then program three is a bit high at 83%. But if we recall, this is what we've been explaining even previously, that for Funza Lushaka, we transfer 90% of the allocation to NSFAS for the bursaries, and then the remaining 10% is transferred in January for registration. And then the remaining two programs are slightly higher than 25% at 30.29% and 31.99%. And then the next slide is slide 105. This one is showing expenditure per economic classification. And then the item that is low, two areas are showing low expenditure, which is goods and services and payment of capital assets. And then in terms of goods and services, it's the workbooks that I spoke to earlier. And then the other area for goods and services is the Kari Gude. And as was explained in the performance part of the presentation, investigations took place, and then for payments of stipends for the last quarter of the financial year, which would have been paid in this quarter under review, were not paid to some of the volunteers because we were waiting for the investigation to be completed and to look at whether those people are, the payments are due to the various volunteers. And then the other item that is low is the payment of capital assets. For payments of capital assets, although it's low, bids for seven clusters for water and sanitation and for modular structures and the conventional structures have been advertised during the period under review. And then concurrence for appointment of contractors for inappropriate schools have been granted and construction is in progress, so we should see increase in spending in the next quarter or two. And then on this slide is the details of the economic classification. Areas that are low there are examiners and moderators, but this one we know that the expenditure here takes place in the last quarter of the academic year, which is the third quarter. And expenditure increase normally in the fourth quarter because after December, then we start paying the examiners and moderators in January. And then the other transfers is where we pay in the Funza Lushaka transfer, which is showing a high payment of 84.5%. And then school infrastructure, I just explained that one. And then the earmarked funds, it would include Kari Gude, workbooks and second chance. That's where some of the low spending has been incurred. And then the details of these are the details of the earmarked funds and the conditional grants. And then maybe the one area to note, workbooks have already explained. The other area to note would be the last item, which is learners with profound intellectual disability. For this one, there was no expenditure for the first quarter because this is a new conditional grant that the department received allocation for the first time this financial year. And then the first transfer for the grant was withheld because of the non-submission of approved business plans. But all the business plans have since been received, and then transfers were made in the second quarter, and expenditure has started to take place. So in the next quarter, we will see expenditure on this conditional grant. And then with transfers, we'll note that most of the transfers on the slide are showing 0%. Most of them, we pay them in the last quarter, and then we will only pay them once we receive the invoices around December, January. That's when we start paying them. They will be paid by the end of the financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Department members. We have received this report, and you were listening very carefully. Can you go? Can we interact with that report? Honorable Basson, Honorable Ulis, Honorable Machesi, Honorable Bosho. Can we?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the presenters. PM, thank you. Colleagues, the report, especially the first one, is so comprehensive, has a lot of information that you will bear with us if we asked you questions haphazardly as you were presenting. Number one, I can't get the presentation so clearly, especially on targets. Sometimes you'll find that they are annual in percentage or quarterly in percentage. Then you find that sometimes you quantify them. And it is sometimes not easy to follow you. I noticed this on some presentations, more special on program 5, when you're presenting the 5.1.1, the nutrition. You speak about 130 schools, I'm sure, quarterly. But you have the target of 10. Out of that 10, you did 5. Now that 130 versus the 10 and the 5, which is, I thought that 130 schools per quarter, and I don't know now why is it again 10 per quarter, and there you have done 5 schools. If you can just clarify that before. And I'm also surprised about the targets that we put on crucial areas of our performance. The monitoring. You monitor 2 provinces per quarter, and in these 2 provinces you do only 6 schools per quarter, only 6 schools. That means for a year you have planned to monitor 24 schools on some of the areas like ICT, you did only Free State and KZN. Then you come to IQNS, which is also another important point. You did only 6 Free State and KZN. My problem is now the pace. Are you going to be able to reach places like Northern Cape on these areas of concern, that is ICT, and if you're in KZN, that is so big, you visited only 6 schools. How do you plan your visit? And on inclusive education, I noticed that you are planning implementation of home education what policy. Do we have enough resources to be able to monitor this home education that we are now about to give, to implement its policy? Do we have, if we can't monitor enough schools now, and then we add now another burden on our shoulders to monitor now the schools, of which school, the homeschool evaluation, are we well equipped to be able to spread our wheat on such things? Coming to a city, it is really disturbing to see that our expenditure, report by report that you present, they are excuses of not performing well on this. In so much that I don't know now what to accept. Every report on a city, of which a city is one of the areas that we are concerned about, the cry outside, dilapidated school, let alone the school, the toilet, sanitation. Schools that are still without sanitation. You spoke on program before, I'm shown SSMs. There are schools that are still doing that manual paper because there's no electricity in the school. They have no liberty in assessing the ICT because there's no electricity. How do we involve the other stakeholders on these areas of water, of electricity, to be able to speed up our performance or to lift up our performance? Carrie Gude, you mentioned that I would like to know on Carrie Gude, have you settled the issue of the millions that are outstanding with AG? Is it now settled? Is the case now closed? Because I don't get it in your presentation. On transfers to entities, I noticed that you are now on 37.9% of the total allocation. Why the department don't just transfer the full amount to the entities so that to make things easier even for the entities to be able to do their work? The piggy, is it a norm or is it according to the standards that you must give them that piggy? Are these allocations that you give them in great enough for the entities to function effectively? The report also reflects spending to the amount of 31% of the allocation. To what extent is the spending translate into attainment of set targets? Remember, in your presentation, that your targets, you didn't reach them. I saw the one which is 100% paying the suppliers or what, of which this 100% is not mentioned how many suppliers. It's just payment of suppliers is 100%. How many were they to reach? Maybe there was one who paid one, then it's 100%. Because it is in percent, it's not quantified. So on program two as well, it seems as if you have understood on this program, considering that this is a core business of the department. What could attribute to this low expenditure? DM, when DM was doing presentation, he was so pleased on the rollout of textbooks and so on. And he said, now you have a uniform approach to supply textbooks. DM, does this mean now all the provinces receive their textbooks on time? It is supposed to be. Thank you, Chairperson, to the follow-up.
Thank you, Honorable Oli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Every time we meet in this venue, I get a funny feeling because this is the venue where, and I can't remember if it was the House of Representatives or the House of Delegates, but anyway, either all the coloured or all the Indian members of Parliament in that old horrible thing called the tricameral Parliament used to meet here. So every time I come in here, it reminds me of apartheid, and it also reminds me that we beat that stupid thing called apartheid and chucked out this horrible system. It wasn't a committee room. This was a fake Parliament created by that P.W. Botha person. Anyway, thank God we moved away from that nonsense. My first questions are to the Deputy Minister. You were giving us some very important statistics and percentages and numbers, and I didn't always quite get them, so I just want to clarify. The first number you mentioned, either 94% or 54% in relation to digital, the digital divide and what was being rolled out. I'm not sure what that number means. Could you just remind me, did you say 94%? And does that relate to how many schools are connected, or I don't know what that number means, if you can just explain that. And then you said 98% of schools are connected administratively. So I'm starting to battle with the numbers. I've misunderstood something because I'm, you know, don't have the history. I'm a bit new on this committee still. Maybe you can just unpack that for me. In terms of the school rationalization that's going to happen across the country in all 9 provinces and so on, could you just clarify for me how many schools are involved or anticipated will be involved and which provinces will be affected? I know some were done in the Western Cape, a lot of screaming, but hopefully now we've matured and got a better approach. But I just want to know how many schools are involved and how many provinces, because people keep asking and I have no idea. Do you know how many mud schools are left in the country in terms of, I mean, there's a CD program, we've got to replace them. Obviously, one or two will be closed with the rationalization program, but others need to be replaced. I'm just not sure how many are left. Is it massive, hundreds, or is it just 5? You know, I pointed a finger at my colleague in the Western Cape, who's the minister or the MEC in the Western Cape, and she said she doesn't know of a single mud school left in the Western Cape, but they do have some prefab classrooms and prefab structures. So I'm just trying to get a feeling for how, you know, how bad that problem is. Minister, Deputy Minister, when did we get to the end of building one school a month? It was a program, it was working,
And then you've described in some detail about the reasons why there's now a problem with different provinces issuing tenders irregularly, and you had to stop it and getting different entities involved. But when does it finish? Which month or which year does it stop? Okay, that's just for the minister. Then in terms of DG and the officials, I have a couple of questions. Slide 13 and 14 and so on talks about teachers, and there's another section later on that talks about skills and upskilling of educators and so on. I asked a parliamentary question about the number of educators, teachers, who are underskilled or unqualified. They're either qualified but not in the right subject matter for what they're teaching or whatever, or they don't have the qualifications. And the number I was given is something around 5,000 odd across the whole country. And if I remember correctly, there are 450,000 odd school teachers. Now, I mean, I don't think that number's accurate, first of all, but, you know, I have to deal with the official written ministerial response, which was this 5,000. I think the number's bigger than that. But if, for argument's sake, your number is correct, can you just elaborate a little bit more under these programs here that are operating to upskill educators who have got missing education, let's call it that. What you're really doing, and is there no line drawn to say that if you do not get this particular diploma or this particular degree or this particular IT course or management course for a school principal or whatever, that there will be some sort of action taken? I'm very worried about this, and the reason I'm worried about this is because today, at 8 o'clock this morning, some educators in South Africa went into a classroom and they didn't have enough qualifications to teach what they taught. We can argue about the number. I'll say it's a bigger number, you'll say it's a smaller number, whatever. But what we will agree on is that there's at least one, and probably quite a few. Your number is 5,000 and something. Those 5,000 and something worry me, because each one of them's got a class of 30 children, 35 children, and they are not qualified enough to teach what they are teaching. In some cases, they've got qualifications, but they don't have qualifications in geography. And now they have to teach geography, but they're actually a maths teacher. It might be that they've got subject knowledge, but they don't have a diploma or something. I don't know. You know, in each case, it's different. I'm really, really, really concerned about that, because we're putting people in classrooms that really don't know what they're doing. And then, DG, if the minister hasn't answered this question in his responses, if you could just tell me how many schools in South Africa out of the total 26,000 have right now got computers for the pupils to use. I don't mean for administration of the school. I'm talking about for the pupils to get access to, for teaching, exactly. And that's the second thing that I'm really concerned about. I watched a video of a man in India who's not a teacher. He calls it the hole-in-the-wall computer. You might have seen it, where there's actually no teaching. He just makes computers available and he builds them into a concrete wall somewhere and puts a glass over it so they can't be tampered with and wet by the rain, and he puts them in underprivileged communities and he tells the kids, you can play with this. That's the level of teaching. But because they have unlimited access to the computer and the internet, because they're all connected to the internet, they start to teach themselves. Now, I'm not for a moment suggesting that teachers are not required. I don't think that a computer on its own is going to solve everybody's educational problems. I mean, I'm not that... However, I'm really surprised at how much those kids learned when they just had one or two questions thrown at them. You know, what is mitochondria? Here's a computer, go find out. And you motivate those kids because they're inquisitive. They've got a new toy. So there's a motivation to go and find out something. And so I'm concerned about South African children's access to the internet in some sort of a structured way. I mean, I don't want children watching porn sites and all that, but what I really, really, really do want is for them to be asked to go and research what is the Great Rift Valley in geography? What is mitochondria in biology? Go and find out how to do quadratic equations in math, because it's on the internet. But go and look yourself. And in some cases, I mean, my question is about how many computers in how many schools. I mean, but obviously the next question is how many teachers know how to use that tool to set the kids questions to go and use that thing called a computer that sits there in the classroom. Because if kids don't have access to it, then it's, you know, so I mean, I'm asking a little bit, I'm being a bit naughty, I'm saying too much, I'm asking too many questions around this issue. But after I watched that video, I'm telling you, I just got goosebumps. I thought, you know, if we could get every South African child into a computer with some structured questions and then left to Google and find and look, and then it's not a boring teacher standing with a chalk going, this is mitochondria. You've actually got that natural, inquisitive, almost naughtiness of the kids activated after education. And it just gives me goosebumps to see what kids can find out if they get involved in that themselves. So I'm passionate about that, you know, and I've been on the Overside just before we were all in that terrible accident to some rural schools, you know, and obviously there's a problem with buildings and connectivity and all sorts of things, but if we can solve that, we will push up our results. I'm going to leave it there because I spoke a little bit too long. I have other questions, but I have other colleagues too, so I'm just going to leave it there. If we get a second round, I'll ask the other ones. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and also, Chair, thank you to the Minister and the DG for the presentation. You know, I'm a little bit concerned. I know you've said something about the electricity, the issue of electricity. The fact that we still have about 561 schools without electricity and we haven't dealt with that. I mean, that's what we had at the beginning of the year, and also 81 schools without water, 66 with no basic sanitation. And when I looked at the presentation for the year up to now, we'll have one school that has been from that number that has managed to get water, and also one school with basic education, basic sanitation out of the 66. So it's a little bit concerning the time it's taking. It looks like, you know, it's going to take us maybe 66 years to get all the schools to have sanitation at the pace that we are going on currently. I also would like to find out, you know, regarding the ACIDI, I know you said, you know, the implementing agents, they are a problem, and, you know, they're not complying according to the agreements. But clearly, like, you know, this has become a problem, and is there a, maybe, you know, you said, you know, you are looking into it, but is there another way that we can look at this type of contracts and really step away from the norm that we've been using and maybe look maybe looking at, you know, other contractors who are able to do this type of work, like especially if we're talking about different terrains. where you find it difficult, where some contractors find it difficult to work. I'm just saying, can we come up with another solution? I don't have a solution. I don't have that. But maybe just to take a step back and look at how the tender process is allocated, and also if we could actually have some involvement of communities as well, maybe to take part. I know maybe you don't approve Minister, Deputy Minister, but I'm just saying I'm a little bit concerned about it. Last week I went to Guruman. There's a school there by the name of, let me just get the name, Butitom High School. It's actually not my issue, it's Honorable Sonia's as issue, but she was not well, so I happened to go there on her behalf. And what we found out there was I had an opportunity to sit in the court and to listen to a case whereby a learner was molested by a teacher. I have to say that it was the first time, because as I say, it's not my issue. And it was a very touching experience, absolutely touching. But what is actually concerning, more concerning, is that the fact that, like, not only have this 30 or 16 learners, we still have to figure out how the number, but about 43,500 learners fall pregnant nationally. They fell pregnant, actually, nationally. And DBE does not know how many of these girls that fall pregnant return to school. It could be the number, the 43,000 might not be this year. It could be in the past, as soon as you introduced the policy, the national policy, or maybe when you started taking the statistics. So I'm not really sure. But it's actually concerning, nevertheless. What concerning is that, you know, of those learners, we don't know how many do come back to the school, despite this being a key measure of successful learner pregnancy policy. And also, you know, we spoke about this yesterday with the DG, whereby I was concerned that, like, the mental health of those learners in that school. When you talk about, you know, being prepared for matric examination, but those learners haven't received any kind of counseling. When I went to the school, none of the teachers wanted to say anything. None of them. Even the ones that were in court to come and listen, they didn't want to say anything. So it is one of those things that is not out there. No one is talking about it, but the learners are going through this. What is it that we are doing? I would like to find out from you. I know the DG said the MEC is doing something about it, but I was there last week and nothing has been done to make sure that these learners get counseling and to prepare as well for exams. The other thing that I've also noticed is that, you know, we have given out, the department actually has given out laptops, they've given out tablets. We have certain schools that have internet facilities, but this is not rolled out throughout the country. And I'm a little bit concerned that this could actually result in grounds for lawsuit, because now they're not pilots, you're calling them initiatives. So I'm a little bit, just for your sake, I'm just a bit worried that now if you say that it's an initiative, is the same as a pilot, because if it's a pilot, then you're covered because you're trying it out. But now if you're rolling it, but then it's not getting to other schools, is it possible that you could be exposing yourself to some kind of lawsuits in that regard? And you have what is called the two-tone portal. Two-tone portal. I know nothing about it. I just want to find out. I would like to see, because I haven't been on the oversight. I think in must have been the beginning of the year when the committee went to Gauteng. They might have had some experience of that Tudong portal, what it does, and also I think must be a program or something, but I'm not really clued up of what it is. And also regarding the transport issue, you know, Deputy Minister, is this a evident that in the Eastern Cape, in KZN, in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, that we are having problems of transport. And Northern Cape as well, whereby learners walk long distances. And we have raised this a couple of times to say, you know, we have to come up with a solution of how to go about it. I've seen a case now recently as well that as I was sitting here, my colleague next door to me, she just sent it to me, whereby there's a problem with the bus that was transporting the learners to the school. But apparently that the bus didn't have brakes, it was not roadworthy. I don't know if he's saying it right. Okay. And okay, it was not roadworthy. And at the same time, so what happened was that the learners were told, you know, because of there was no food that day, they had to walk back to school. So endangering their learners. But anyway, I think the honorable next to me will actually go into the details of the feeding scheme. But the issue is that the fact that, like, you know, the problem with the safety of the buses, you find that now, you know, there's money that has been allocated by the department to a service provider, and then the bus is not roadworthy. And now the parents, they don't want to use the service provider, and also they won't allow a service provider that comes from another province to come and provide this service. And I just want to find out if you can intervene. I'll give you the name of, I think, Honorable Embalenhle. And the issue of digitalization of books. It's actually, these are good initiatives. The problem is, how long is it going to take for us to roll this out? And will the learners of KZN or in the rural areas have access to this? So I'm a little bit concerned about having programs that would normally work in the urban areas, but then impossible in the rural areas. So I just want to find out if you have any plans with that, regarding that, because it's a good initiative. It does save the department a lot of money, but the problem is, like, who's going to have that access to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Chisik. Honorable Bashoff.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation, and good morning to the DM. I'm going to start off with the enrichment program, and I also want to commend the department on and the provincial departments on doing well. But we have seen that there are some discrepancies. Especially recently, we saw the big fight in the Pinetown district because of the irregularities with the provision of the tenders. And because of this, our learners are suffering. And I'm asking the DBE to please intervene as a matter of urgency. Our learners go to school expecting that one meal a day, and they cannot arrive there and be sent home on an empty stomach. Secondly, the same issue, district, Embalenhle, the day before yesterday, the children also went home because the food hadn't been prepared, and after investigation it was brought to the fore that the food handlers will not start preparing the food until they know how many children there are. That is just not on, because they say then they waste the food. If they don't prepare it, it's going to go to waste anyway. So we must have a look to see why they are using this approach. Is it because they would prefer to take the food home themselves? Because we've read articles of food handlers selling the food to tuck shops and taking it for themselves. So if we could get a report back on that as well. And then I'd also like some assistance with the ECD program in Pilgrim's Rest. Pilgrim's Rest resorts under Public Works, unfortunately, but there's a school that still has asbestos classrooms. They don't use the classrooms to teach in, but those buildings are standing there, they are broken, it's very, very dangerous. Now, according to the principal, letters have been written to the PED to intervene with Public Works, but year in and year out, those buildings remain. And together with Pilgrim's Rest and the rest of the northern villages, water and sanitation is shocking. Most of the toilets are overflowing. They don't have doors. They don't have seats. The sewer is running down the pathways already. There are no basins at these toilets. They can't wash their hands. So what we are teaching our children, they cannot implement because the facilities are just not there. So if we could have a look into that, please. And then I'm also getting very, very worried about the vetting and verification of our educators, especially in the light of what happened yesterday and recently. And I'd like the department, together with SACE, to bring out a new policy or a new program on how we're going to vet and verify our teachers. Because there is just no way that a principal becomes involved in a gang rape. He is the custodian of that school, together with teachers and a security guard. Unacceptable, disgusting. We spoke about it yesterday, but we need drastic interventions with regard to this. They are absolutely undermining the rights of our children. They're temporal parents, but they don't act like that. Then I'd like to know what the scope is of the psychosocial support and what the outcome is of this support. The support that is given, do the learners have to go to the department? Do the social support component come to the schools, or how does it work? Because if there is social, psychosocial support at the department or the district, it's not always available for our learners. So if we could just find out about that. And then my colleague touched on the computers and my other colleagues as well, and we've all been on oversight and we've seen these classrooms stocked with computers. No teacher. So what's the use of making provision? It's an irregular expenditure if nobody's going to teach that subject. It's the same as the science and maths labs. They are there, but they're locked because they don't have appropriate teachers. And then DM, I hope you're going to intervene very quickly with regard to this. You are aware of the litigation from Section 27 because of the non-delivery of Braille books. It is on record that they are implementing a litigation case against you, and we know that our blind learners don't have Braille machines. They don't have Braillers. There's no money to maintain the little Braille machines that there are. The ordering that's done through Pioneer Printers is not being done the way we are being told it's done. And then I'd like to know these Braille machines that were found, where were they found? And why did it take so long to find them? What condition are they in? Are they in such a condition that it could be provided to a school, to use? And then I'd also like to know how much budget is put aside to maintain these Braille machines, because it's a... I don't know what the word is. The person that has to maintain them has to be trained in that field as well. So if we could just get some information on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Marshall. DJ, I also have some questions. And, you know, having appreciated the opening remarks by the DM, I would like to say that we must appreciate the efforts that you have taken to correct the issue of the audit, the internal audit. I think it has been a long battle that we have had with you for you to deal with this issue. Even the AG has raised it several times, so we appreciate that you have really worked hard to improve on that one, and also appreciated the fact that maybe some of the It's a good performance that we see in certain areas of the report is as a result of that audit, the internal audit. But I really want to know, with this first quarter, did we get a clean audit, DG? Because is our audit unqualified in the first quarter? Because it's cumulative. We don't have to wait for the end of the year to know that we are going to get a clean audit. The same way as we assess the learners, like the SBA for the department, we must start, monitoring and improving where there are problems. I have noted that some of the targets that you have raised, that you have identified in the APP, you have reached 100%. But others, particularly my concern is on the annual ones, where you find that as if we wait for the third and the fourth quarter to start taking action on the annual target. But an annual target is divided into four quarters. The first quarter, you must give us 25% of the work that you have done, because you can't say that, no, we are going to wait and say you will get the results. We wait for the results and act afterwards, no. So we need clarity on those 25%, and DG, this thing, if we don't deal with it, we are going to have a problem. It's a problem for you as the accounting officer, and DM as the accounting authority. I think you must take the shambok. You must start shamboking the DG so that he deals with the ones that are at the bottom, because the SMS is going to deal with the lower levels of staff members. If your juniors do not work, you take them to task. You take action against them, but what happens to you? So I think it's one thing that we have to talk through in this meeting, GM, because there must be consequences, because we can't come here and listen to you telling us that no, there's going to be work happening in the third quarter, and it can't be. You must plan. You must tell us what you have done in preparation for that work. You must warm the bed before you get into it. So that's my point. And then you look at all the programs. Program one, we have underspent by 4.9 million. Program 2, 24.4 million. Program 3, 2.2 million. Program 4, 4 billion. Yes. And then program 5 is 1.2 million. I think we must know what the people that were supposed to be dealing with these areas were doing in the last quarter. What is it that they were doing? And DG, have you taken action against them? What action have you taken to make sure that we correct the situation? So we don't want you to play, play house with those people. We are not playing house. We want to build schools. We want to create jobs. We want to improve the economy, and there's no way that we can control it, because it borders on the Operation Pagisa. It borders on the national goals. It borders on the multilateral agreements that we have adopted as Parliament. We must contribute, and then we are neglecting that responsibility. So we need to see the letters that you have written to these people who are not doing their work but continue to earn. The other point that I wanted to raise is also attached to the issue of ACD. I know that there are a lot of dynamics, and we must appreciate the fact that you have acknowledged that one GM in the presentation. But if we know that there isn't going to be action in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, why do we allocate? Why don't we send money where it is needed? Because that money keeps going on a rollover all the time, and they miss even the benefit that they are supposed to get. Because if every year you miss about 2 billion of resources, and next year you were supposed to get another 2 billion, so it becomes wasteful on the part of the department to continue. I know that there might be other dynamics that are forcing you from Treasury to allocate. Constitutionally, it will be wrong, but I think the money must be placed where it is needed most, because most of the provinces have got backlogs and they can't reach their targets. So I think DG and DM, let's look at that point. Another point that I wanted to raise is on the underperformance on the new conditional grant for learners. It is recently approved, and my view is that there must be plans in place, because Treasury cannot approve a grant if you don't have plans. What is it that motivated to National Treasury for them to allocate this grant? If you can't, hit the ground running immediately after the funds are allocated, so, it's a serious disservice to these learners. I think that one thing or the other could have been done, but we are doing an injustice to these learners that were supposed to benefit from this grant. And then the issue of digitization also, I wanted to talk to it, but maybe to comment the progress being done, but it's taking place at a very slow pace, especially the one that we have raised before with the DG in one of our meetings, that the LTS and it can be digitized. I think it's a step in the right direction, but maybe if you can give us a cue where to go so that we are able to see these things. We want to see them, and I think it will be of great benefit to the learners, more so that you find that we don't have good retrieval systems in the different schools. So with the introduction of this digitization, we will be able to save a lot of money, and also the learners will continue to benefit at any time. Thank you very much. Over to you, DM and DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues. I'm going to try to speak as broadly as I can on very important systemic issues that have been raised. The one deals with infrastructure, which is generic in nature. It's raised by more than one of our colleagues who are present out, the honourable members. The other is in terms of ICT and to give you a sense of the nature of each one of those, so that you are better able to understand the response of the department. Let's look at the issue of infrastructure. When we talk about infrastructure, when we talk specifically about the ACD program, we are talking about the Accelerated School Infrastructure Development Initiative, and that there is to replace mud schools and unsafe schools, or schools built with unsafe materials. So the ACD program is not a general program that is directed at the establishment of new schools, but it is to replace mud schools. What are the realities, one might ask? The realities are, not very long ago, you had mud schools in Limpopo, in the Eastern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, some parts of the Western Cape, and principally and primarily in the Eastern Cape, some parts of the Northwest. We have eliminated the phenomenon in all the provinces except for the Eastern Cape. So in other words, as we speak right now, the only place where there are MUT schools is in the Eastern Cape, and hence the larger expenditure allocation to the Eastern Cape. So that's an element that one has to take into account, and originally I think the number of schools that were determined, and I speak now mentally on from memory, but would have been in the vicinity of 540. As a result of the rationalization, it has been reduced to something like 370 or 380. And again, I speak from memory because, but I would imagine I'm reasonably correct in terms of my indication. The question then is, what progress has been made? As we speak right now, 182, but between 182 and 184 schools, state-of-the-art schools have been built. In other words, this is not an ordinary school with a few classrooms. It has a library, it has a laboratory, it has grade art facilities, it has preparation areas, it has ICT connectivity, it has sports amenities wherever possible in the context of the land that is available there. And if you take on average, take for example the Western Cape, which has been the recipient of the second largest number of schools, 24 have already been delivered, the expenditure is not less than 32 million per school. But if you visit those schools, you'd understand why, because it's really a dream school. In a area, and so you're right, you know, you think about the tricameral system and you think about what the colored community and the Indian community, the African community have, it's very different from that particular reality. So it really inspires hope and confidence and creates an environment that's conducive to learning. So the question then is the progress, and that was it's a very important question, has the progress been reasonable? The years, and I again speak, I will be marginally incorrect if I'm incorrect, but 2014 to 2015, 2015 to 2016, we would have built at least 107 schools, 53 in the one year and about 51 in the other year. So if you take the two combined years, it's an average school per week, which is incredible. Last year there was a lull, and the lull was caused primarily and principally by the merger process that took place in the Eastern Cape. Now you must remember the Eastern Cape would have been the beneficiary of more than 250 schools replacing MUT schools. And if there's a problem with mergers there, you would find the delay, the slowdown occurs there in principle. But because they are the principal beneficiaries, it affects the entire program. So that would be the explanation for the lull over there in the Eastern Cape. And as we speak about that, you know, Ms. Macheke raised the issue quite correctly, and about how do we deal with this matter here? How did we deal with the matter? At the time that they had the problem prior to 2015-2016, the then Deputy Minister of Finance, who became the Minister of Finance, the current Deputy Minister of Education, the Deputy Minister of Justice, we got together and we said, let's meet all these contracts, all these service providers, and find out what's the problem. Amongst the problems that we were able to identify is they would engage with one contract for seven schools. So you would find three schools are, according to plan, in terms of delivery, but four schools are not. Now, if you're going to determine and the contract, you're going to end it for all seven. And it creates an anomaly. So we said, no. Some of us do have a sense of legal experience, we come from a legal background, to say, but you've got to have a separate contract for each one of the schools, so you have to determine the schools. And we suggested a range of things, including legal interventions. Now, that's not a job of a politician or public representative, but we thought because of that. And the result of that, and it wasn't one meeting that we had several meetings, the result of that is what you saw, a school per week. Now we've had this lull, and again, the intervention is taking place. Again, the minister and deputy minister are getting down to engaging with the affected stakeholders. We've met service providers, implementing agents ourselves. And I think just between in the past year, I'm not talking about financially, in the past year, we must have had not less than five meetings already, which means that we are looking at this matter very, very seriously. And I feel reasonably comfortable that we would compensate for those that we've left behind in the previous year, in this year, if we basically work hard enough and fast enough. So in a sense, you would almost come very close to your school per week on average. Now, what are the challenges in infrastructure? You would find infrastructure is provided in the deep rural areas of the Eastern Cape because these are where the mud schools are there. Who supplies electricity? Not the Department of Basic Education. You look at Eskom. They are responsible for energy. Who supplies water? It's the municipalities. So you have a school in a particular location. Electricity has to be supplied by Eskom. Water has to be supplied by the municipality. You don't own the municipality. You don't run the municipality. You appeal to them. You urge them. You plan in a way that it could be provided. And these delays are caused not because of our inability to pay for it, the services, but because the services are not being provided to their point of delivery by the municipality or by the service provider. Now, those are realities that we can't ignore. But in the context of where we were, in terms of electricity alone, we've provided electricity to more than 10,000 schools in less than 15 years, which is quite remarkable. And where are we now? And to show you that there is progress, as we speak right now, you've got the first quarter report comparing to this. At electricity, what is outstanding is 229 schools. And I agree fully. You can't have a school without water and sanitation. It's an affront to the dignity, the violation of the dignity of the learner and the educator. So I'm not even trying to defend that particular reality. I'm saying it's unacceptable. But we are making strides. So there are 229 schools right now without electricity. There are 343 schools without water. As we speak right now, it does not appear in the first quarter reports, Ms. Remember. I'm giving you the current statistics. And all these 343 and 229 schools, is where there is work in progress. In other words, it's not something that we're contemplating to provide services for. Contracts have been concluded. Work is in progress. So we do believe that we are going to make huge inroads by the end of the financial year. And sanitation has now been reduced to 160. And again, like you, and as you would correctly say, we cannot condone a school having sanitation that is inappropriate, inadequate, that affects the health and the well-being of the child, but it's an affront to the dignity of the child. And so we don't disagree in terms of our perception of what has to be done, but we're providing you with these particular realities. Now, you know, at times you think and you believe, as we did at one stage, that the bigger contractors are the best service providers. Go to the Eastern Cape, and we've learned from the Eastern Cape that the most efficient providers in terms of building of schools, these state-of-the-art schools with smaller contractors as compared to the bigger contractors, who have buildings in KwaZulu-Natal, buildings in Eastern Cape, buildings in Gauteng, and they would choose the most convenient, easy sites to pay attention to. And the more difficult terrains are what they know. And we literally had to terminate contracts of big contractors who were doing well in other provinces where they didn't have these geological challenges, where supply of material was much more easy and comfortable, and retention of professional staff was easier. So it's not an easy task of simply saying, well, you know, the terrain is the same everywhere. It's not. And we must recognize that. The second reality that we must recognize is that there is an unevenness in the development. There is a disproportionate development of our provinces as a result of the legacy of the past. You can't compare Gauteng to KwaZulu-Natal or the Eastern Cape in terms of infrastructure, in terms of roads, in terms of service provision. Nobody can compare Limpopo to the Western Cape. Historically, these provinces had huge advantages in terms of human resource capacity, in terms of infrastructure and amenities. That's a reality that we cannot ignore. So when we talk about ICT, we are saying as a department, we are looking at the African rural child. And therefore we've got a dedicated department on rural education so that these needs, in terms of ICT, in terms of quality education, in terms of mathematics and science teachers, so that you don't have computers in a classroom, but you don't have an educator who has the technological skills to be able to teach the subjects are being addressed. Now, this disproportionate development has resulted, and indeed continues to result, in an unequal provision of an environment that is appropriate and conducive to learning, and we have to correct it so that there is parity. But it's not an easy task. So even if you provide the textbooks and the computers, You have to have the ability to have an a teacher who is competent in that particular subject, and the ability and capacity to retain the teacher in that environment. Migration is a reality, whether you're African, whether you're colored, white, or whatever. Think about it. Go to the Western Cape, or go to the Eastern Cape, and you find how many white teachers do you find teaching in a township school or in a rural school? Are they racist? No. It's just because of the realities of urban attraction and urban comfort. So those realities create a challenge of their own for the departments to be able to retain skills and competencies within those particular areas. So it becomes very, very complex, and I raise that because it's not as an easy solution. But what is it that we speak about when we talk about infrastructures, we talk about water, we talk about electricity, and we talk about sanitation? The commitment of the RCD program is that should be eliminated. And the minister has been very, very clear to say, please do not tell me about anything. Don't even tell me that you're going to plan for 2 years from now for sanitation and water. You can't be doing that. That must be urgent and that must be immediate. And indeed, what we've done, we've intervened in areas where service providers were not able to provide adequately in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, and we've replaced them, and remarkably, we've made the progress that we made now because we have different service providers for those particular areas. So the intervention is indeed being made. Now, what is it? Now, let me deal with the issue of ICT. It's important that we understand that it's very similar to the infrastructure. The Department of Basic Education has a responsibility of training the educators. It has a responsibility of ensuring that ICT is integrated into the curriculum. It has, wherever possible, to provide the devices that are necessary for teaching and learning to take place. And at times we become over hasty in terms of what we want to do. Technology is rapidly changing. The learning and teaching environment is changing. The blackboard is being replaced by the smartboard. Textbooks will, in due course, be replaced by either your tablets or your iPads or your computers. And you're not going to have your desktop computers. You're probably going to have your laptop or your tablet. So this is how things are evolving. People are not even using the iPads anymore, they are using the smartphones as educators and as business people. Now, Operation Pakiza was launched to basically look at this particularly important element of ICT in education, they looked at 5 things. They looked at connectivity. They looked at the devices that have to be used in schools. They looked at training specifically. They looked at the curriculum content in terms of digitization, and they looked at administration. And what is it that we've learned from that particular exercise? We've discovered that in terms of administration, if you have ICT, your task in basically managing institutions of learning becomes much easier because you're able to provide information in real time. If you look at the performance of districts in Gauteng and the Western Cape, which produces the best performing districts in general, Free State has also produced amongst the top 10, you would find that all those districts that have performed well are digitally driven. In other words, they have data that is being driven digitally from the schools because they are web-based and they are live. And that makes a huge difference. So when Mr. Ola says that if indeed you're able to take ICT to the schools, we agree. Because you see it empirically and scientifically that performance of districts has improved significantly, dramatically, as a result of the data-driven approach. So the good news is if you look at the Free State, which is a rural province, they're using data. They're using ICT in a way that makes a difference. That's why they were the first province to break the glass ceiling of 90% in terms of pass rate. It wasn't Gauteng, it wasn't the Western Cape. Everybody thought it's going to happen there, but it happened in the Free State. Why? Because of ICT. So the potential is there to ensure that even rural provinces could utilize ICT to bridge the digital divide and to basically improve optimally. Now, in order for connectivity to take place, it means that you have to rely on your partners. Who provides the fiber, who provides the connectivity? Not the Department of Basic Education. It's the Department of Posts and Telecommunication Services. So we have to work with them and to say to them, listen, please, these are our schools, prioritize it, and indeed they have prioritized it. We wish we could do so ourselves, that we would be able to connect ourselves, but we are dependent, as we do in electricity and as we do in water, we have to look at our sister departments, and therefore we have this integrated approach that we are now following in order to make that a reality. Now, you asked what is the difference between the administration. For administrative purposes, we have what we call the South African SASM, South African School Management System, used by 8 of the 9 provinces, and in fact, I think the Western Cape would probably have to join us if they want to be part of this conversation here. They have an alternative form, which is reasonably compatible with us, because we want the data to be made available across the country, not provincially, but there's no tension about this particular matter. Where we are is that we have 90% of our data of our learners already captured and verified. So we would be able to tell you, on, if you give me the identity number of a learner, where the learner is, we'd be able to tell you what the age of the learner is, who the caregivers and parents of the learners, whether the learner has been vaccinated, and what is the performance of the learner. But we want to make this web-based so that it is live. We would be able to control and measure curriculum coverage, absenteeism of learners and educators, performance of schools on a web-based system. But for that to happen, it is basically to ensure that you have the connectivity, not the 3G card, but proper connectivity to go out there. And interestingly enough, the question was asked, is it, why have you visited only 2 provinces? We've visited, this is the first quarter report. The Deputy Minister in the monitoring and evaluation and the Deputy Minister of Basic Education have visited KwaZulu-Natal, the Northern Cape, the Northwest, I think Free State, Gauteng, and I think we've done 6 of the 9 provinces already, and we're going to do all 9 provinces to check on the level of development in terms of ICT in these provinces. How are the teacher resource centers functioning, and what is their plan for ICT? I can say with a fair degree of certainty, that by the end of this administration, every school in the Northern Cape, believe you me, notwithstanding the fact that it's geographically spread as it is, would be connected for teaching and learning and for administration. And they've got a remarkable plan. The Northwest is not far behind. Free State is quite well ahead. So where our key areas of challenges is in difficult terrain such as KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, and to an extent Limpopo. Mpumalanga, for example, 60% of the schools are able to give you data in terms of curriculum coverage on a live basis. 60% of the schools in Mpumalanga, and that's quite remarkable because of the application that we've developed and refined. So our key challenge with regard to ICT is less about the digitization or the applications that have been developed, but it's more about the connectivity, the fiber, the broadband, and the speed at which we can basically get that. And that we must get right sooner rather than later. Obviously, the Western Cape and Gauteng are in a huge advantage in terms of that particular infrastructure. So this is where our focus is, and that is why I said in my open remarks, that is the vision that we have. To say that the child in the Siki-Siki must not be better, must not be at a lesser advantage than the child that is in Sandton or in Houghton or in Rondebosch, for that matter. There should be that parity, and we should utilize ICT to be able to do that, and we're working extremely hard in terms of that. Now, the SASM is quite extraordinary. It's in fact almost the most reliable instrument that we've developed in terms of that. And therefore, it creates a platform. And once we get to it being, we are working on the first phase to get it web-based live, we'll be able to get all this data here that I'm speaking about. I'm talking about attendance, I'm talking about curriculum coverage, and a range of things. The question then again, it's linked to connectivity. Now, for administrative purposes, even if you have a computer or a laptop with a 3G or 4G card, you can get data. So we have 98% of our schools that are connected that way there. In other words, you can communicate with a principal in School X in Bushbuck Ridge simply because there is a measure of connectivity. Not ideal, but there is connectivity. In other words, you can communicate interactively with that principal, and that's where we are in administration. In terms of teaching and learning, 54% of our schools are connected, 54%. And I've said it right at the beginning, it's not good enough. And when we say schools, we're not talking about high schools only, we're talking about all schools, because connectivity is a phenomenon that should be permeating the entire system. So your learner in primary school needs ICT as much as your learner in high school. And therefore you find the city schools, and many of them, most of them are primary schools, we make sure that there is ICT in the libraries and in the schools, so that our children who are in grade 2 and grade 3 are able to have that particular benefit. Now, beyond the must schools, you know, the question was asked, what about these mergers and how do we deal with these mergers? Mergers is a phenomenon across the country. Free State has merged many, many schools, so is Mpumalanga, so is Limpopo, and the Western Cape. And the Eastern Cape is busy finalizing the process. The Eastern Cape has more than 5,000 schools. And of those 5,000, more than 1,200, in my opinion, in terms of their scientific, have to be closed and merged. That's huge. But the advantage of that is you'd be able to have a merged school that would be better resourced in terms of educators, in terms of amenities.
Sorry.
So you would replace...
Just a two-finger, why don't you just say those two numbers again? I didn't get them.
Sorry, the numbers for learning and teaching?
No, the numbers of schools that will be rationalized. You just mentioned numbers.
I say that the Eastern Cape potentially has 1,200 schools that can be merged and rationalized. And we can provide you the list of the schools. That the entire assessment has been made, and the MEC has been personally to those schools. So you would have the entire thing.
The DM, just to intervene on that one, Honorable Ollis, if the DM has not captured some of the questions, I think the DG will deal with them. Thank you.
Okay. So now I'm going to go to the specifics, because I thought it was important that we just give you the general understanding of what it is. Ms. Basson spoke about the targets. Now, targets again, you have Ms. Basson, you correct, colleague and comrade. You know, you have your targets that are quarterly, you have your targets that are annual, and that you have your targets that may be biannual. So for example, your National Senior Certificate Examination is an annual target. So you won't be able to report on the National Senior Certificate Examination other than the supplementary examinations in your first quarter. You would then be able only to respond to it again in the next year, because the exams have been written, the results are not out in the last quarter of the year, or it would probably be in the fourth quarter of a financial year, if I could put it that way there. So in a sense, your targets are informed by the nature of the work that is being done. So if you say satisfaction of educators, I'm just saying, what is the level of satisfaction of educators? You're not going to do so quarterly, you do so annually, and you have one report. So in the first quarter, you might have nothing to report on it, but if it happens in the third quarter, that's when you'd be able to give an assessment of what it is. So if you understand that context, then perhaps you'd be able to understand the deviation, which I also noticed it as I picked it up, and that's why I'm able to respond this way, because I asked the same question as you asked, by the way. So it's an intelligent question, but it has an answer that is important. The visits, like, and I've explained how we visit. When we said in the first quarter it was two provinces, there were other provinces that have been visited in the other quarters. And I must tell you that these are very thorough visits that have both the political and the administrative support of the departments. Now, with regard to inclusive education itself, I think we've made strides. So let's look at the issues of blind. And I'm not saying that there are no challenges. I've always said that why we have to do better would be an inclusive education, because our children are most vulnerable there. They're differently able. And what do we do differently? But our workbooks are being provided. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's in Braille for blind learners. We're providing technology in our full service schools to assist partially sighted children. So in other words, besides your Braille books, there is technology that will enhance the ability of those learners. And that's quite modern state-of-the-art technology that we're providing for all our full-service schools. The questions with regard to the condition and status of these devices, I will leave to the DG because those are kind of details that I would like to hear answers to as well. But I think we must recognize that we are doing something positively and meaningfully. And that comes to the question of the chair, and I'm sorry I'm mixing them up there, but because they're also connected, to say, what is it, you are right, chair. You can't have expenditure, you can't commit expenditure without a structured plan. And for severely affected persons with intellectual disability, we had to develop a plan. The plan has now been complete, and you would now see the expenditure taking place, because the division of revenue would not allow allocation of resources without a plan. And so whether you go to Gauteng, whether you go to the Eastern Cape or the Western Cape, you would find that for intellectually, severely intellectually disabled learners, they have a particular plan that they're going to produce to the department, and the department will, on that basis, they be able to make the allocation over there. So that process, I can assure you, is already underway, but your statement in regard to plans is indeed a correct one and an important one. Now, I thought I dealt with the sanitation issues, Ms. Person, and I hope that has assisted you, but I agree with you. You can't condone it. We've got to work harder and harder, and every time we come here, please remind us and be as hard and brutal as you should be, because the DG must understand that we are not going to condone it. It speaks to the dignity of our educators and our learners. Now, Karikure itself is quite, the AG has commended the department for taking the steps that it has taken in relation to the forensic without a request from the AG. There were hundreds of learners, excuse me, who were receiving benefits without being eligible for it. In other words, a learner who has been in matric now goes for the Karikure program and receives, or is enrolled as if he or she is an adult who is eligible for it and is not. I mean, that's fraud. And indeed, what has happened is basically we were able to recover huge sums of money, but the investigation, because of the scope of it, it involves millions of learners. Do you know that the Karikure program has reached 4.3 million people? It has been regarded, we've got global acclaim for it, it's regarded as one of the most successful programs. But because of the scope of that particular program, because of the scope of the problem, you have these problems that are creeping in, and it's a matter that has to be looked at, and indeed there's been engagement with the AG in relation to that. I wish we could transfer tranches the way it's been suggested, Ms. Basson, one time. I don't think it can happen. The transfer occurs as a result of, it's always on a quarterly basis to schools, so that you also minimize abuse of resources. Imagine if you transfer the whole tranche and there's an abuse, all the money spent out there, where are you going to get the money for the rest of the year? So there is a control, because it's an accountancy element out there which basically informs when the transfers should take place. Mr. Ollers, I come to the issues that you've raised with regard to administration. I hope you understand that, and the academic and the teaching and learning. The MUT schools, I hope you understand that phenomenon there. But interestingly enough, in the Western Cape, they've eliminated West MUT schools, but what they have is Planky schools. And we've already eliminated 24, well, we've already replaced 24 schools. In fact, the 25th one is going to be delivered soon. So we say Planky schools and asbestos schools, which asbestos is unhealthy. I attended an asbestos school as a young person, and I know generally Africans, colors, and Indians were given asbestos schools, not brick and mortar schools. So we had to replace all those schools out there. So if you go to Lanesia now, you would find that there are no asbestos schools, they are all brick and mortar schools. But when I was a learner in Lanesia, I did my high school there, every single school, primary and high school, was made of asbestos. So if you go to the historically colored areas, you find that phenomenon persists. So in Cape Town, it's Planky schools. But if you go to the historically colored areas of El Dorado Park, Bosmore, and so forth, you would still find the asbestos phenomenon there. But the MEC has committed himself, and indeed is working extremely hard to replace the schools. So there is good news on that particular front. And we've said, and this is where the suggestion was, can't you redirect resources where there is no expenditure? It can occur in terms of the division of revenue funds. We have done so in the past, and indeed we will do so, where provinces have the capacity, and especially with this phenomenon of asbestos schools, where we could basically redirect resources, and we are looking at that very, very closely. So indeed, the suggestion is a good suggestion. Now, you know, the issue of abuse of learners cannot be condoned, is unacceptable, violence against learners, and with principles are involved. it's just absurd. It's just absurd. We can't. It's repugnant, totally repulsive and repugnant. And the sentiments that you express are what I would fully endorse. Now, the competencies of principles itself is being addressed in the Bellabel. Remember the last time I came to you and I said to you that I give you the assurance that it will go through Parliament. It has been adopted by accepted for public comment. In fact, we would have already gazetted it, but we've received a request, the DG is aware of it, from the Governing Body Association to say before we gazette it, they would like to speak to us about certain issues. And we told them, look, we can gazette it and still meet, but they said, no, we've promised them. And we don't want to now basically not meet with them. We are meeting with them on next week Thursday, all the unions as well as that. And immediately after that meeting, it's a consultative meeting. We don't have to make any decisions. We will be putting it into the Gazette for public comment. Once that is concluded, Cabinet approves and it comes to Parlament and it will be your baby. So the Bellabel deals with the issues of competencies and the appointments of principals and the manner in which they are going to be admitted. It will be good news for you. There's a range of issues that's being dealt with in the Bellabel. So, interestingly enough, what we've done also in the department, and that task is almost complete, and people are not aware of it, the point that you correctly raised, the profile of an educator. In other words, I may be having my majors in mathematics and science, but I go to a school and I teach history and geography. I'm not the most competent teacher in that. And yet, other schools are in need of that particular skill and competence. We profile our educators, and the last I inquired, we were about 90% complete in profiling all our educators in terms of their qualifications and experience so that we match their qualification with the task in school. And a lot of mismatches take place, and you would find in some schools you have three teachers who are qualified in mathematics. Just down the road is another school without a mathematics teacher. And in that three teachers, only one of them teaches mathematics in that particular school. And we have to change that there, but the profile has indeed worked. I know for a fact that the Eastern Cape is now completed, Gauteng is completed, Western Cape is complete, most of the provinces are complete, so we are almost there. And what this LURITS would do for us, if it's web-based, it would tell us in real time what the skills profile is of educators in each and every school. It would be such a huge, a powerful instrument in our hands, and therefore I look forward to that. So the point that you make about mismatches is indeed a valid point, and it's something that we are addressing it very, very urgently. You see, you also make the point about research, and one of the reasons why outcomes-based education in its previous form, I'm an exponent and I continue to be of it, because problem-solving skills, research, mathematics and stuff, all those generic outcomes that we sought at that time are relevant more than ever today. But you can't have research when you don't have a library. You can't have research when you don't have ICT, and therefore ICT becomes so important. So if there's a legacy that this ministry wants to leave for this administration, is that all our schools must be committed to teaching and learning. Let's put it that way. So that's a priority that we give to that then. Hopefully we will be able to celebrate that with you. Then, Ms. Macheke, I've spoken about water and electricity. We agree. I've spoken about also the manner of engagement. You know, in the Western Cape, I just, 3 weeks ago, if you go down to Hermanus, the historically colored area, I've forgotten the name of the area itself. But if you look at the school, it is so beautiful. I mean, there's the most stunning views of the sea, but it's beautiful. Now, that school there would have been delivered 18 months ago, and it was stopped by the community, and there were huge problems where communities didn't want the contractors to continue. They wanted to have a say and drive the process. We had similar experiences in the Eastern Cape. And our view has been always with regard to the Asiri is that wherever possible, utilize local talent from the communities, because you can draw that. Your bricklayers are there, your electricians. But where that's not possible, then you have to get it from elsewhere. And you can't say produce community, otherwise we're going to stop. So it's a question of how you manage that conversation with communities. And we are very sensitive to it, because if you don't do it, you'll start a project and within 2 months they'll stop the project. So we've learned a few lessons about communication and liaison. So the point that you make is indeed a correct one. Now, teenage pregnancy is huge, and I'm not even going to argue about the numbers of 43,500 that you provided over there. It may be close to it. We have 13 million children in our school. So let's also look at the numbers in the context of the learner population. I know you have primary school and high school, and we all recognize that our children are becoming much more sexually active at an earlier age. What the department has done, and in fact we've just invited to address UNESCO in America about our comprehensive sexuality education curriculum that we've developed in order to deal with this particular issue of HIV and AIDS, sexuality education, reproductive health. We've invested a lot in it, and we believe that the solution is really in proper education that should take place. It means that teacher qualification, teachers must be competent to teach the area, the curriculum must be appropriate and suitable, and importantly, another element has been introduced is that what about educating the parents? Because often the education takes place in school, but the parents are out of the loop, so that they also become active participants and understand the consequences of teenage pregnancy and how it basically thwarts the outcomes that we seek to achieve. In other words, could ruin the future of a learner. So yes, our policy in teenage pregnancy is liberal, allows the learners to have the basic right, but it goes beyond that. And the psychosocial support cannot be provided in districts. It has to be provided at the school. I mean, that's my view. And we've been arguing consistently to say that if you have that capacity in the district, that capacity shouldn't be office-based. It must be made available to schools. And in fact, the district is a starting point. It should go beyond the district to the circuits and ultimately to clusters of schools. That's the kind of psychosocial support that we've been arguing for. And we've been working very, very hard on arguing and trying to champion psychosocial support among the provinces. It was non-existent at one stage, but now we are seeing the emergence of that particular reality amongst the provinces, and that's good news. We're not exactly where we should want to be, but certainly we're getting closer to that particular reality. So teenage pregnancy is more about prevention, it's more about education, and I think asking the hard questions, recognizing that it is a reality in certain environments, in many environments, do we prevent children from receiving condoms? Shouldn't they be made available? And that was the document basically, the policy says you can't deny a child that is sexually active from the ability to be able to receive that particular condom. Obviously prevention would be the first, and education would be important in doing so. And we have to open our minds to that reality and say, well, this, amongst other things, is what comprehensive sexuality education deals with. So I've spoken about the laptops and the tablets, and yes, I've discovered that too, that in some instances you have the laptops and the tablets. But a lot of dumping also takes place. You know, corporate social responsibility in the past, it's improved significantly. They would dump their laptops out there. They don't think about teacher training. They don't think about connectivity, nothing. And because the devices are there, now it becomes our responsibility to provide for everything else. And they feel, well, look, we've contributed 20 desktops. And in many instances, they've taken their desktops from their offices, replaced them with new ones, and find a school to donate these desktops to, and they want all the sing and all praise of it. But they don't realize that it takes more than that. It's about ventilation, it's about security, it's about training. More importantly, about training. We are investing a lot in terms of teacher training for that to take place. Now, the Tutong Power Portal is one of the first portals, Ms. Macheke, that we've established out there, and you can get a lot of resources. We also have the Kufunda. For any phone that you have, small smartphone, any phone, you can download your past papers, your exemplars, just about anything that you want from there. 200 readers that can be downloaded. So your past papers are no longer something that you go to the library. You can do it on your cell phone right now. your workbooks on your website, education website, can be downloaded. Four grades are already interactive. Now, that chair, you know, you asked about digitalization. This digitalization is remarkable in the context of where we are. I don't think any country in Africa has gone as far as we have in terms of digitalization. And what we're doing in terms of digitalization is quite unique. We are basically making education a public interest matter, where parents and anybody who has an interest in education can download those resources free of charge, mahala, and utilize it. So when you talk about your grade 10, 11, 12 maths books, they can be downloaded free of charge. Father can do it, mother can do it, brother can do it, sister can do it. So education in South Africa becomes a public interest matter. It becomes actually an open source. And I think it would be remarkable about our culture of human rights and the priority that we place in education, that we make those resources available to the general public. So when we have a core textbook per subject per grade, we're saying that we are providing that for the entire nation. Now, we can't wait for Bushbuckridge to get his computer and digitize them. We must digitize now so that when it gets its computer, it can access that information. We are already very, very far with our Infinite Education Cloud, and we've been in negotiations with service providers where they would allow us to put the cloud on their system, and if you download and interact with that particular education cloud, you will reach it. Remarkable, unique, and this is where we are heading towards in terms of the future. So transport continues to be a problem, but if you look at the reports and if you look at the quarterly reports and we are making progress. We're not where we should be, we are making progress. And we're working very closely with the Department of Transport in relation to safety matters over there. I'm going to try to rush now. Is that the note to say, please wind up? Thank you, they're being very polite over here. You ask difficult questions, so I have to give the answers. Ms. Barosov, I think we've spoken about, DG will give you the details about those devices that were found, you know, and I don't have that. The asbestos element, I think I've spoken about, sanitation I've spoken about, the issues about pogroms, we will look at that. I certainly will basically take it upon myself, and I've dealt with the psychosocial issues over there. With regard to Braille itself, I mean, there's only one printer that does it, Pioneers, and that's a problem. There's no competition. And basically, they can determine the price. They can determine the time for that to take place. And we have to do something. So technology was one alternative that we used, basically, to ensure that there are alternative means, but we have to address this issue of Braille. Do we own that? Should we just own it then? And then be able to do it better than the private sector, I don't know, but it's something that we have to reflect on. It's a huge challenge that we face. But Chair, I'm concluding with your things. You are right. If you don't have an internal audit committee that is efficient, you're going to continually have problems with your auditing. You would not have the unqualified audit that you seek to achieve, and the department has paid particular attention to that particular element, and thank you for that. You also raised the issue, and you're not alone in that. One of our colleagues have raised the issues about consequence management. You see, it doesn't help if we condone incompetence and lack and apathy and complacency on the part of ourselves, and then come to this committee to say, look, this is what we intended to do, but we were not able to do it because of X, Y, and Z. We have to show those people who are incompetent, inefficient, and who don't have a care about the human rights of our children out there, that they don't have a place within the system of education. I would support it if the DG is as hard as he should be. With those people who basically deny the rights of our children, he must do that, because we're certainly not going to stay in his way. So it's a hard statement from you, but it's a fair statement, because it's about consequence management, and we support that completely. I hope I've helped also in terms of the digitization to say, let's rather celebrate it than challenge it, because we've also done that without any resources being spent. We've done it in partnership with Vodacom, we've done it in partnership with the Shuttleworth program, and we've done in partnership with Sasol and Zalo. All this was for Mahala, so it was not at huge cost, and we've done remarkably well there. So the issues about conditional grants and the Division of Revenue, I think I've spoken to that. I'm sorry I've been so lengthy about that, but I thought if I give that particular context, then it becomes clear as to where the problems are and how difficult it is to deal with all these particular issues. But thank you for your interest. TG, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Deputy Minister. I think the length that the Deputy Minister took to respond to this must also be viewed in the context of an average of 10 questions again, which means it's 50. I'm also not going to be able to cover all of them because the Chair has indicated that we left only with a few questions. And Honorable Boshoff, today you have asked exactly 10 on my record. Okay, Chair, let me just try and add what the Deputy Minister has already covered. The underperformance of programs that you refer to, it's really not underperformance. Expenditure is not necessarily exactly linked, clinically linked to program delivery on targets. Let me give an example. Workbooks are in schools as we speak for workbook one, but the expenditure for that has not been effected because we are still collating invoices, verifying them, and then make sure that they are paid. So the delivery does not always coincide with program delivery does not always coincide with expenditure. So on that note, and again, the second reason, not all programs, if you say programs are underperforming, it means that you are taking a linear view of your analysis, which is not always correct. Because not all programs will spend 25% per quarter and cumulatively leading to 100%. It depends on the time frames of the deliverables per program. For instance, one program might only deliver 5 or 10% for the first quarter and deliver 40% in the second quarter if it's an annual target. And the other example, in fact, the other explanation that I want to give, Honorable Basson asked about the delivery of, is it 30 schools? I think, I can't remember, but it was 30. Yes. Yes, that's what I want to explain. No, the explanation that I've received is that you've got an annual target. Yeah, I'll ask them to just check it for me. You've got an annual target, and the annual target is broken down into quarterly milestones. Right, into quarterly milestones. And what you would see probably is 10, a 5 instead of 10. It's a milestone of 10, you've delivered 5 against a milestone of 10. Well, it would be perceived as underperformance, but if you look at it, that is an annual target, you still have 3 quarters to deliver on that. But because you've broken down your target into milestones, in terms of your milestones, you're underperforming, but in terms of your annual target, you are not underperforming. Yeah, let me just explain that.
I understand what you are saying about what CM says, but I was confused with that because you know nutrition program is very important to monitor and the food is people.
Thank you for the opportunity. Just to try and respond to your question, Honorable Basson, if you look at the reason we have 130, the second column, the reason we have 130 and under, you see a capital that says quarterly. We're trying to show the distinction between the indicator in itself that we're reporting on it quarterly. So that is, even if you look at 5.2.1, it says 900 and under, means it's got a word that is written annually. And that is just to show that it is a target that is reported on an annual basis. That's why when you go to the third column, you will see a dash there, because there is no milestone. Let me not say milestone. There is no target, but then we report on the milestones. So the idea was just to show the distinction between on how we have reported the targets that have been set, and in annually how we have reported the milestones. So if I make an example now, 5.1.1, we are having 130, and then our quarterly target is 10, and we have managed to.
Chair, Honorable Basson must check, that 130 is under the main column, 2017-18 annual target as per annual performance plan. It's an annual target. Now, out of that 130 of annual target, this is broken down into milestones. And for the first quarter, there's a milestone of 10. Yeah. And then, yes. No, on top it says annual target.
Can I just respond? The reason we mentioned, sorry, Chairman, just to say that all the information that we have raised is based on the projections that the department has made in terms of their own targets. So we are not talking about something that we have not seen yet. Like, the department will say that this is the amount that we like we are going to spend, let's say, on infrastructure. Let's say 4.6 billion, and then you end up spending 4.2, and then the balance comes into the picture. So that's what we are raising as points of concern. It's not to say that we are trying to put you on a tight corner. We are saying that if you can make us understand why it has happened that way, and the only way to do it is the way you write your report. Thank you. DJ?
Okay. I'm sure we'll probably need more time. I'm saying that the template is very clear. What Honorable Ollies was referring to, if you look at columns of the template, are very clear. What might be causing some confusion is that in terms of the annual target, then you write quarterly. And I'm sure Ms. Monsu and the team will have to look at that. But if you look at the column on top, it's very clear that it says annual target. Yeah. So that's fine. But also, Chair, we must take into account that we are reporting on the first quarter. We must take that into account, especially for annual targets. This is the first quarter. We appreciate the fact that the committee is raising issues of concern. This is just the first quarter. And remember that the financial year is also not linked to your school calendar year. The for instance, the first quarter of your financial year is actually the second quarter of your school calendar year. So that's why you always have that mismatch between your program delivery targets and financial the expenditure. But over time, in terms of the four quarters of the financial year, cumulatively, it must lead to 100%. So that's the explanation that I thought I must make. Chair, the other issue that I think I must just touch, because the Deputy Minister has already covered that, Honorable Basson also raised the issue of the number of visits to provinces. The number of visits to provinces, we're not targeting to visit all schools. The number that is determined depends also on other activities that the team is expected to carry out. The rest of the monitoring has got to be done by the province and the district. In fact, the role of DVE is not to visit schools. The role of DVE is to monitor provinces
whether provinces are visiting schools. And how do you do that? You sample schools to verify whether provinces are visiting. So the number of schools that you are visiting will never be, you know, the same number of schools that a province is visiting. In the same way, the number of schools that a province would be visiting would be less than the number of schools that a district is visiting. The further you are from the unit of verification, the lesser schools you cover. I hope that is clear. And we use that sample just to verify whether provinces are doing what they are telling us that they are doing or what they are supposed to be doing. Then ASIDI, Chair, in terms of ASIDI, I understand, I'm not sure whether it was Honorable Machesi or you, I think could be between the two of you, where probably rightfully so, you might view our reasons or our explanation as an excuse. The truth is, we have reported in the outgone financial year, the annual report is still coming when you resume in the next session. We have said to you, we had to terminate contracts with some of the implementing agents or take away some of the projects. E.g., we have taken over 20 schools from IDT. We have reallocated them to Kuga, to DBSA, and Vula Trust. And Vula Trust. That involved a long and very complex legal process. Because the releasing party was not even willing to take responsibility for part of the work that has been done. Up to even last week, I had a meeting with IDT to make sure that issues that relate to session agreements are now finalized, which are legal issues that relate to projects which were not delivered because IDT did not perform. But also it took just a long time for us to get out or to extricate ourselves and hand this over to a new implementing agent. I'm humbly requesting you to take that into account. And I'm sure I could even invite you to get into some of those meetings with us to get a sense of what is happening there. And maybe because I said time is not on our side to respond to everything, Honorable Basson, the 44 million, as far as we are concerned, it's now settled. And I know either before or after we present the annual report, you usually have a session with the AG. So I suggest that you test it with the AG. It's been settled. It's no longer 44 million, it's 1.2 million irregular expenditure. It was reduced to 1.2 million irregular expenditure, which means that the AG has now accepted the report of the forensic audit company that did the work that we told you about. There's no longer a dispute, there's no disagreement between us and the AG. And that I'm saying you'll get the opportunity also just to verify with the AG. The issue of transfers to entities, Deputy Minister explained, there's a risk associated with that. It wouldn't be in the interest of the organization or the receiving organization to transfer the entire amount. Sometimes when we transfer big amounts, it's a risk that you are taking. But there must be a sound basis for taking that risk. And then I've spoken about program versus expenditure, that they are not clinically linked. Honorable Ollies will give you the number of schools that are connected. Otherwise, Dr. Maboya was going to do that. Time is not on our side. We'll send you that list. We'll email you the list, including the list of schools that are to be rationalized per province. We'll also, Deputy Minister has responded to that, but Dr. Whittle has indicated to me that it's only 137 schools that are still outstanding in terms of the MAT schools. 137 from the number that the Deputy Minister referred to earlier on. Just one point around teachers who are not qualified or not placed. There are actually three dimensions there. One is teachers who are underqualified, and I don't think we have that any longer. I'm sure we had very effective programs to deal with teachers who are underqualified. You used to have an old qualification, I think, which was REQV less than 13. I think it was about REQV 12 and 13. It's the level of qualification. When you took REQV, it's the level of qualification. Sorry, Honorable Machase, it's the level of qualification, which means that it was an old qualification which was recognized during apartheid. But it was designed to ensure that you've got substandard teachers. So once we reviewed our norms and standards for teachers, that qualification then became inferior. It became inferior, and it was referred to as teachers who are underqualified. And you've got unqualified teachers. Some of them might have a degree, but they don't have a teaching profession. And some of them might have just a matric certificate. They are still unqualified. And some, the other category is teachers who are qualified, but who do not match, the qualifications do not match the requirement of the post. The example that Deputy Minister gave is qualified in maths and science, but he ends up teaching geography. It's a mismatch between the requirements of the post and the qualifications of the teacher, the profile of the teacher. And I think the figure that you have been given, that's what the system is giving us, given the profiling that the Deputy Minister also referred to. South African children access to internet, we can also send you that as part of the connectivity data that we'll be providing to you. I happen to be aware of the computer on the wall. I was on a trip also to India, I saw that. But I must caution, despite what the Deputy Minister said, Microsoft said to us, replacing your traditional text with digital form of textbook does not necessarily lead to improved learning outcomes. That's Microsoft. And Microsoft also said to us it's better to use both. And the other research that I came across not so long ago, which is about 2 weeks ago, also by an IT company, they say that it has now been proven that access and utilization of IT contributes not more than 1% to improving learning outcomes. That's empirical. Chair, Honorable Ollis knows that the only way to counter empirical evidence is to come up with a counter empirical evidence. Okay. And Honorable Machesi, electricity, water, sanitation, low achievements, again, my humble submission is that remember it's the first quarter, and particularly infrastructure. With infrastructure, it's not like paying salaries every quarter 25%, 25%, but we take your caution quite serious. And then ACB, I've spoken to that. I suggest that, Chair, in one of your meetings in the next session of the committee, you consider maybe that we come and do a presentation on learner pregnancy, even on school safety, so that we deal with them in a very comprehensive manner. Honorable Machesi, I also want to say, if you want us to come back on learner transport, we can come back. We did engage with a very comprehensive presentation on learner transport. We can come back, but I take your observation is spot on. There would be many instances where learners are still walking, but whether they are walking for more than 5 kilometers, which is the policy, is the issue. I mean, even Stats SA, if you look at how they collected their data, it was about learners working for more than 50 years. It's not even linked to the policy. So, but I think we can deal with these issues. I'm suggesting that if it's possible, you could also slot it in within your program. You can come back with learner transport. Honorable Boshoff, on school nutrition, we'll investigate this and come back to you. Thank you very much for, especially in Balenze, where learners had to go back because of this flimsy explanation that was given.
Just on that one, sorry to interrupt over there. I personally am aware of a letter that the minister has written, besides the intervention by the department, to draw the attention of the MEC to this particular problem out there. So there's been a formal letter written by the minister in this regard. I mean, I just saw it a week ago.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Boshoff, again, ASIDI is now being possibly migrated to provinces to form part of the Education Infrastructure Act. So I'm responding to the needs of Pilgrim's Rest, which you've raised. But we could take it up with provinces when we are dealing with both grants. And then the vetting and verification of teachers, thank you very much. We engage with SAIS on that on an ongoing basis, that we need to do something, and given what we've now seen happening in our schools, to strengthen our vetting and verification of teachers for protection of learners, but also making sure that we contribute to creating a safety environment in our schools. So we'll continue. And I would suggest that when you get the opportunity, I think you are going to get the opportunity when SAIS presents its annual report, when you come back, you could also just raise this with them to expedite this issue. The scope of psychosocial support. Now, what's been happening is that we've been providing this service at district level. The new grant, and Dr. Maboya can correct me on that, is intended to increase that service. For schools, for instance, learners with special education needs, such a service is needed at school level. For ordinary schools, you can provide it from district or sub-district level. And the grant, the multidisciplinary team, psychologists, social workers, and so on, which the grant is intended, the first expenditure must actually go towards appointing those people. That's what this grant is about. So that's what this grant is going to help us to do. The issue on Braille machines. My institutional memory tells me that every school for the blind has got a Braille embossed machine, Dr. Maboya. The challenge is around maintenance, which Honorable Boshoff raised. And we've been told that some of the problems related to maintenance is because people using these machines don't seem to know how to maintain them. Now, I have said to the team, what we need to do is to make sure that either we get people to maintain the Braille embosser machines for each of these schools, or we make sure that they are properly trained to know how to maintain them. Every school, I can put my head on the block. They've got a Braille embosser, small Braille machine called Braille embosser machine. They were provided with that. They used to have them. A DM talked about schools with computers which are not utilized. There's an issue around the capacity of Braille in the country. There's a ministerial task team. The minister has appointed a ministerial task team together with the minister of the Department of Arts and Culture to deal with the issue of Braille capacity. Because some of the schools that you might have come across are still waiting for some of the Braille materials, simply because we don't have the requisite capacity. It takes long, especially with the change of textbooks, change in literature and so on. It means that those schools, you know, will have just to use the small machines which will not be able to translate the entire book into
braille reading. We'll only be doing it with a chunk of few pages and so on. Honorable Mugodo, I've really tried, and I think Deputy Minister has covered many of these. If there are areas that we have not fully covered, I can assure you, as we always do, we will forward a comprehensive report with responses to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members, and the Deputy Minister.
Oh, sorry. You talked about WIPI as part of consequence management. All the people who potentially could be whipped are in your room, starting with me. Beyond this, there's no one who would require whipping. Yeah. But we also have a record of consequence management in the department on all of these things. It's a record. If you want us to share it with you, we can do that. Thank you.
The possibility exists. We're going into final exams for all our classes, and there are municipalities that have been threatened to have their electricity cut by Eskom. I know it's actually got nothing to do with DBE, but it's going to negatively impact. Is there any way that we could have a look at this to see how we can assist those schools that don't have generators? Now, in my town, it's been cut as from the 9th of October.
Chair, could I, with you,
Thank you, Chair. I'm just responding on what the DG has just said regarding the schools that you don't have learners who walk more than 5 kilometres. I've been to 3 schools. I've been in Ugutula High School in KZN. I've been to Uvue School in East London. I've been to Sifosonke in KZN. All those schools, the learners, they walk for 10 kilometers. So I have evidence. I've actually walked with them a week ago. The learners at Ugutula High in KZN, and it runs 10 kilometers. And also the other thing that I wanted to maybe to find out, because the deputy minister was saying that, you know, our learners, they become involved in sexual acts at a very early age. I think it's the school that I went to in Kuruman, where those learners, the 30 learners, were fallen pregnant, impregnated by the teachers. There is a sports ground. If you go there, it's a rural area. There is nothing, really. Those learners, they've got nothing else to do after school. And then there's a tavern, which is not far from the school. So basically, what the only recreation that they have is going to a tavern. So they can't wait to grow up to an age where they can go. I don't even think there's an age restriction to go to a tavern. But yet they have, in their own premises, they have a big space that could be used for sports grounds and for recreation, instead of having the tavern as a recreational space. And also, you know, the committee has said that we need to invite the Department of Sports and Recreation. Do you know the budget of sports and recreation is 1 billion? So I don't know why we're even consulting them, because there's no way that they can assist us with this, with the problem of recreation. So it has to be included within the budget that we receive as a department, because the Department of Sports will never be able to do anything for us with that allocation, if you think about it. And also, who holds, even the little that they get, because they send to the municipalities, what happens to that money? Because if you go to school after school after school in the township, there's no sports grounds, nothing. And also the other thing that I wanted to ask Minister, Deputy Minister, is the fact that our budget was reduced last year. I don't know by how much, but I think it was reduced by a small percentage because of, I don't know if it's the department's budget or the entire budget. But When it is reduced, like for instance, if you come up with digitization of books, eventually that is going to reduce, it's going to impact the budget by reducing it. But that money has to be at least reinvested towards sports grounds instead of going back to Treasury. I just want to find out what is the procedure regarding that. Because if you're trying to save money, but then you don't get the benefit of saving money, then is it really an advantage to us to do that? Thank you.
I'm going to give Honorable Onis. Members, I have a meeting that is scheduled for 12:30, and I can't abandon this meeting. And it has been long scheduled. So I would really appreciate that, you know, some of the issues, even if the department does not respond to them now, they can be at least write to you like they have promised that they will submit their reports. Honorable Ulis.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be quick, but it's an important issue. My problem with that comment about Microsoft is this. Education systems have been based on European empires in the 18 and 1900s. In that era, the idea was this. You have to get all the information in the textbook into your head, and you've got to learn the data, the numbers, the geography, the history, stuff your head full of information. So that if Microsoft says to you that just taking the textbook and putting it on the computer is not going to work, I agree, but that's not what you have to do. What you have to do is change, give up on that old European empire idea of stuffing your head full of data. What you've got to do is learn. What you've got to do is learn, how to teach yourself, because the jobs of the future haven't been invented yet. The jobs we have now are going to be done away with in a lot of ways. There are going to be new jobs coming from new industries, and you can't find that in a textbook. What you've got to do is learn how to research. So, for example, what you need to teach kids in school is how to use the internet to find information, how to write a report on that information, not what's in the textbook. If all we're going to do is stuff kids with the information that's in the textbook, we're not going to teach them how to learn. And that's the difference between what Microsoft is criticizing. Yes, they're right. If you just take the textbook and put it online, well, it's only going to be 1% improvement. But that's not what they're doing with the hole in the wall.
Honorable,
they're teaching you how to learn.
Please minimize your... You know what, I think we need another session, DG. I want to agree with you that we really need another session. And since well, Mr. Brown has highlighted that there's going to be a meeting that talks to the program, I think some of the issues that the members have raised will have to be, you know, slotted into the program. They are quite critical. And, you know, the DA today was a majority party in the committee. And then even the chairman was coming from the minority party. So did you, can you deal with the issue?
Yeah, Chair, I agree with you. I don't think Honorable Hollis got me right. I didn't even say that... Microsoft said you must put a book into your head. But we need to have a workshop around this, bring experts, and then talk about that. The argument is that giving a tablet to a learner does not necessarily lead to improved learning outcomes. Honorable Machesi, the question that Honorable Machesi, or let me first say, I did not suggest that there are no learners who are working for 10 or even more kilometers. I only refer to even what the state SAE is using in the collection of data. I said it could be possible that those learners are probably working for less than 5 kilometers, but it could also be possible that there are those that you even refer to here. But my suggestion remains that we come back and present so that we show progress, and we able to also give you areas where we still not covering in terms of learner transport. The issue of money that is not spent, it does not remain in the department. If we taken away by Treasury. It does not come back. It goes to something called Central Pool, and Treasury decides what to do with that money. Even budget cuts, they don't come to the department. They go to a central pool. We can't redirect. We can only redirect what we have. If you look at our baseline is reducing every year as a department and as a sector.
Yeah, thanks. I think the question was basically this. If there's going to be saving through procurement, then you can't be, it can't be punitive. In other words, you're saving now, you lose the money. And we've argued with Treasury to say, look, whatever saving is, Treasury has not taken money through savings. So when the centralized procurement, the allocation, division of revenue takes place, and because through centralized procurement with the support of Treasury, money is saved. They don't say, now, look, we've saved you 200 million, therefore we're deducting that. That hasn't happened. Because we said that would be very, very unfair in terms of that, and the resources are required. So we will consistently stay by that argument that you can't take away the savings. It should serve as an incentive. That's the point. So let's see, the hole-in-the-wall, for example, phenomenon is not new to South Africa. Do you know that there are more than five places where Department of Science and Technology, at that time the Deputy Minister was Derek Hanekom, him and I basically, at least I know, two sites where we put in the hole-in-the-wall. And it's a wonderful phenomenon because what it does, it engenders self-regulated learning. In other words, you don't need a facilitator for teaching. They just find children kids are basically wired somewhat differently. They're much quicker than us in terms of figuring things out. So that is a phenomenon. Started in India with the home on the wall. Part of it has been adapted in South Africa as well. It hasn't been expanded sufficiently, but it has huge potential, and I agree with you. But just on this point here, the curriculum is aimed moving away from rote learning. That's when you just memorize. But to be able to apply knowledge in different contexts, to become analytical, innovative, and problem-solving. So your view and perspective is, in fact, embedded in the curriculum, in terms of its pedagogy. you asked me a question, Ms. Pacheke. I'm just trying to figure out. Ms. Pacheke, what was the question? Remind me, I'm getting old now. Has it been responded to? If it has been responded to, then leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, JM and the DG, and the support for the support team that you have. Members, thanks for your inputs and contributions and for being manageable. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.